this show.
She already had a thing.
Some fucking imitation Italian food you got.
It wasn't imitation. It was a tour of Little Italy.
Oh, yeah, that's what you need. Cocksucker.
Show is brought to you by Onnit.com. Go to Onnit.com and use code word CHURCH to get 10% off all of their great optimization products like Alpha Brain, New Mood, ShroomTech Immune, ShroomTech Sport. I'm going to have to try out the Strong Bone because my knee's killing me. When you go to Onnit.com, use code word CHURCH to get 10% off. Also, go to NailedItLife.com and use code word Joey Diaz to get 20% off the premier vapor pen on the market for all the oil and wax smokers out there. And if you live in California and are interested in edibles, they're also the makers of Los Gummies Hermanos, some of the best edibles on the market. Use code and Nailed It Life / Los Gummies Hermanos, and go to hitesigs.com while Joey opens another edible. hitesigs.com and use code word Joey's Church to get 5 hit e-cigs for $50.
Oh shit!
Please allow me to introduce
the church of what's happening
myself.
Now, cocksuckers.
I'm a man of wealth.
If you want to see the devil, you gotta get down.
I've been around for a long, long year. Stole many a man's soul away.
Monday, August 3rd.
I was around when Jesus Christ had his moment.
We're making this motherfucker happen tonight. Yogi Steve.
Me damn sure.
Lee Syak.
Washed his hands and sealed his face.
There's only one way to go deep, cocksuckers.
Pleased to meet you.
The church.
Hope you guess my name.
Good evening out there in podcast land. How are you cocksuckers doing? What's happening, Lisa? Yeah?
I'm doing great. I had a great... Actually, on Thursday, I forgot. On what? Yeah, well, after the podcast, we went and had dinner with your wife and daughter, and it was the best time in the world.
It was great.
It was just I haven't been around kids for a while. It's kind of weird, but after kind of like high school, when you go to college, I haven't really been around kids, and just seeing, I get to see your daughter every few weeks, once a month, and it's amazing how much she grows. And then she hasn't. It's not that she doesn't like me. But it's kind of like with your cats when they're like kind of feeling me out. She's like, I don't really trust him yet. But then when she was running around with the two little kids, she's like just the biggest smile on her face. And it was just it was great to see it. Because I remember when you told me that you were going to have Mercy on the way down to like one of the improvs.
One of the improvs, yeah.
And now,
our asses off.
And now she's almost two and a half or is two and a half.
And it's all changed ever since she hit the half. For the first 6 months, I kept thinking, everybody says terrible twos. They're going to fucking lose their mind. She was a complete princess till 2.5 weeks ago. Once she hit 2.5, it's over. It's over. It doesn't stop. It doesn't stop. It starts at 8:15 and it goes straight till 10, 11 o'clock at night. We put it down at 9 and you can still hear pots banging and she does doing a one-man show and a concert. But tonight I was looking at her and it was after dinner. We were just sitting there, and I was talking to my wife about something. And I looked at her, and I go, you know, if she knew how much joy she brought, if she could understand how much joy she brought to two lumps' life, because I'm a fucking lump, you know? I'm a fucking lump. I mean, let's face it, and my wife is a lump. We're two people that were very quiet at home.
You're solid. You like your solitary stuff.
We're lumps. My wife was never into parties. You know, that's why we hit it off right away. She told me her likes and her dislikes. And I don't have to be drive all over God's creation. My wife doesn't put no stress on me for any of that shit, which I really appreciate. But if right now, if it was just me and her, I don't know what we'd be doing. I do not know as a couple what we'd be doing. She'd be involved in her work to the end, and I'd be going on the road every week. I mean, why not? I have no child. I would go out every fucking week and enjoy this run. But this child has no idea how much whoever sent her, whatever God, the Jew God, the Hindu God, God God, the Puerto Rican God, the Irish Catholic God, whatever God you believe in that sent that little girl into our lives, just, I own my life like that. I can't even, you know.
Seeing her with the dog was like the best, like the funniest I've ever seen. Because she would go up to it and like almost touch it and then just scream and run away.
And run away. It never ends with the animals. It's just, I'm going through a great time watching her, you know. And it's, I just look at my wife. I look at my wife and I think of all the bad things I've done. And I think that this is the first person that I've really genuinely made happy. Like, she smiles from eye to eye. She found her friend. My wife again, man. This kid don't like anybody. This little baby doesn't like anybody, especially if she has her wife's, my wife's thing. She's very sweet, my wife, but she's never really been involved with people.
Right.
My wife gives it like a two-time, you got like two times, you got like two shots with my wife. Then it's over. There's some people you don't really have. And even today, I took her to the pool and I could notice that she was just playing by herself. There was 1,000 kids at the pool. She plays by herself. She's in that imagination phase.
Oh, okay.
And she's an only child. I was an only child. So when I look at her, I know exactly what she's going through. I remember. You know what I'm saying? Like you think of how you had to dip into your imagination. Not that my parents were older, but my parents acted older and they wanted me to act older.
Right.
They wanted me to have more response. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't have the luxuries a lot of kids have. My mom was a little stern on me. So,
are you disciplining her yet? Or, like, I don't know, even know when that starts.
I don't even know how to fucking discipline. I can't discipline nobody.
Really?
I can't discipline a child. I was telling, I'm like a big brother. She fucking knows. She don't know. She calls me daddy because of Peppa Pig. They call the guy Daddy Pig. You know what I'm saying? She don't fucking know. She thinks daddy's a ride. She jumps on me and I carry her. And, you know, when she's getting yelled at by my wife, she runs to me. I'm like her fucking intermediary. I'm not a father yet. I don't even know what the fuck to do. I was watching The Sopranos, and that's when she had the party.
He
drove her home. And she goes, "What'd you say to him?" And he goes, "I don't fucking know. We love our kids. That's why kids are fucking spoiled. Because we don't want to say dick to them. What are you going to do? Anybody die? No. Anybody lose an eye? No. Then we're okay.
Right.
So what? They did some ecstasy. What do you want me to do? Jump up and down? You want me to be a hypocrite? You know? So I don't know what. I don't know how to fucking parent. I would know the first fucking step. The only thing I know is how to give them love. That's all I know. It's like my cats. I know how to give them love. I get mad at Demi. I'll throw a fucking newspaper at that motherfucker. But the rest of them can't handle it. They
really?
Could never handle it. No, Demi's a fucking street cat. You know, all of them are street cats, but some people can handle it. I can never hit a child. I don't
know. Oh, no, I'm not asking. I'm not saying you hit her, but like,
pick her up by the neck? I don't know what that's like.
Almost like kind of what your parents did, where it's like they're teaching you how to act.
Now, hold on 1 second. Check with me in 12 years. You know what I'm saying? With me in 12 years.
Oh.
But at this point, I don't know what to fucking say to her.
I'm not even anywhere near ready, but I've started thinking. Like, you just start thinking about it, and I have, like, no idea. Like, when she was running around, and we had, like, your wife would be on one end, and you'd be on the other just to, like, block her off from traffic. Every time she would get close to anywhere near the street, I started having a panic attack.
Well, I have panic attacks, but you really? Gotta control them. Yogi Steve, what are you thinking?
How you doing, guys?
What's happening,
you're giving
my brother?
Me hope. I want to have, I'm 44. I'd like to have a kid one day, too, so I know you're 52, so you give me some serious hope, maybe one day.
Move up a little bit.
Yeah,
were,
sure,
you ever, were you ever married, my brother?
No, I've never been married, no kids, just, you know.
No, I was gonna, when I called you this afternoon, was to ask you a really important question.
Sure.
I don't want to do it here,
right,
but I'm going to have to.
Go for it.
Do you mind if I call Yogi Steve on the podcast?
You call me anything you want.
What's your real name?
My real name is Steven Tartar, like tartar sauce.
Okay.
But Steve, Yogi Steve, that was my Facebook name. When we created our Facebook accounts, everybody wanted to keep their privacy. Maybe, they're looking for me, but I'd never really done anything. So, but that name kind of stuck. So, yeah, you can call me whatever you like, Joey.
Okay.
Absolutely.
No, I didn't know for sure. I don't know if that was a name that our beloved, because John Budd's been talking about you to me for a year.
Oh, right.
He's like, how did I say you got the guys get together? Because I've been selling him on the kettlebells.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been bugging him on, you got to get kettlebells at VMAC, you got to get kettlebells at
VMAC. I'm psyched to be there. It's awesome.
But it's a great way. It's a Tuesday morning.
Yep.
It doesn't get into anybody. See, I used to go to a class for kettlebells, and I was always intrigued by them. And then one night, when you and I were growing up, we had to look at the fucking encyclopedia for information.
That's right, that's right.
And hanging, there's no kettlebells in that fucking Britannica.
Nothing. Didn't exist.
But now, you have any question at all, fitness, health, medication, something you're feeling, you go online. So I went online and I looked into kettlebells, And it said that it was the number two exercise at the time for burning calories. Like, sure. I don't know. Every swing burns 20 or 2 or 18 or just something fucking amazing. And I know for jiu-jitsu, it's not about the bench press, but it's more about the explosiveness.
Absolutely.
You know, pitchers have that explosiveness. You know, football players, when they get the ball off the line.
That's what the swing is.
And that's what the swing is, an explosive exercise. Absolutely. So I went down and I started doing it. First couple times, I thought I was going to have a fucking heart attack. When he made me do that, the Turkish get up the first time, I thought, but he was like you, you know, get up to an elbow and let's call it quick.
Yeah, we don't want to hurt you.
It's a step thing, you know.
Yeah.
Now, how did you get involved with kettlebells? Pretty interesting. Tell us.
I got a ridiculous long story. I'll try to give it to you short. You know, when I turned 40, I was overweight and I realized I was basically pre-diabetic. I was waking up to go to the bathroom 3 times a night. I wasn't sleeping good. My daily energy levels were just for shit. I was just basically tired. Now, mind you, I was smoking herb for 25 years. Maybe that has something to do with it. But, you know, I was always a yogi and into yoga, but I wasn't really training hard. So let's just say somebody owed me money, $100, and I knew I wasn't going to get it. And they said, hey, I got these two, I don't know what they are, like cannonballs with a handle on them. I'll give you these instead of the $100, knowing that I'm never going to get that $100 from this guy. I was like, sure, I'll take them. So all I did with them was take them and walk them around Runyon Canyon Park. I live right in Hollywood, and I started, body fat just melted off of me. And something about the way it felt in my hand I really liked. So just like you said, I went online and just Googled it, and I'm 100% self-taught. Everything I've learned from just videos. I've done one-day seminar with an expert. But, so I started training with them, and I went from 188, pudgy as fat as fuck, all the way down to 155, like completely ripped. But now in the last 4 years, by using kettlebells and some barbell stuff, because I like to deadlift and bench press and barbell squat, I built my weight back up to the same I was when I was fat. So now I'm 180, really lean and really strong and no longer pre-diabetic. So, you know, a lot of that's with diet too, but training's super important. And I just love kettlebells. They're good for you as you get older because you don't have to use 300, 400 pounds to get a great effect. So you can take a 53-pound kettlebell and it could be your tool for life. And it's a great combination of strength and conditioning. So it'll build muscle and help you burn fat.
Now, it was really interesting. Tonight, my wife's friend was working as an accountant or something weird, and she quit her job and got a job as a controller or something. Something in the same field, but not really. And she's getting paid $50,000 more. So she called my wife, and she asked my wife if it was weird that she was switching careers at that age. And my wife was talking to me about it, and I go, listen, in this economy, you know, when we were growing up, you were a mason for life. You know, you learn how to do masonry from your father. You learn how to do construction from your father, and you took into it or whatever the fuck people are doing. Now the unions, you know, they barely exist. You know, it's a lot of with the laborers and stuff. They're using, you know, non-union labor and all this shit, so it's tough. But the point is that it was a really interesting story you told me. You used to be an online gambler. How the fuck did you get, and you made a living.
For eight years.
How did you get involved in that?
Well, let me tell you, most gamblers, when they talk to you about poker or any gambling, about their success, they're basically just, they lie about it. Gamblers are compulsive fucking liars. But I come from a gambling family. I used to go to Atlantic City when I was 13 years old. My mother used to sneak me in the casino while she played blackjack. I would just fuck around. But I did start playing craps. I got into gambling, you know, all through high school and through college. And then at one point, I discovered poker. And I learned, because I studied math in college, I studied accounting, basically. And then I discovered poker, and I realized, oh, shit, I could be the house. I could have the advantage in this only game in the casino. You really can't beat craps, roulette, blackjack. So I got into poker. So my whole 20s were devoted to basically living in a casino. All I did was play live poker.
Where were you living?
I was living back east. I was living in Jersey.
And you were hitting Atlanta.
Trump,
City.
I'd go to Taj Mahal. That was like my playground, basically, every weekend. I was actually teaching Taekwondo during the week. And on the weekends, I would go to play poker. And after a year of that, I was making more money playing poker. And that's how you become a professional poker player. You one day look at your money and you say, oh, I'm making more money playing poker than, you know, teaching Taekwondo.
How many nights a week were you playing poker?
When I was playing like that, I would play for, like, I'd only play on the weekends, but I'd play 50 hours over the course of 3 days. The most I ever played was 36 hours straight, live. Yeah, I was 25, young. You have unbelievable stamina at that age. You know,
you taking notes, fucko?
No, poker is the one I need because I love blackjack. But it's,
yeah. Well, as long as you can afford the losses, you can play any game you want. But gambling is a sucker's game. It's not, you know. I got lucky that I had whatever I needed to be good at poker. And then when poker came online, you know, I'm really like a pot smoker at heart, a pothead. So I'd like to be able to work out of my home, smoke up, and work. So once online poker became popular, I played that for a living for 8 or 9 years until they shut it down about 4 years ago. You know, the government shut it down. And I just wanted another business, so I just got into kettlebells, which was, you know, I like to make my hobbies into a job. And you're looking at somebody who's never really had a boss other than when I worked for my family business back when I was, like, 23.
That's really impressive, making your hobby your job.
It's super satisfying. You know, I'm not rich from it, but I just absolutely love what I do.
But you love what you do, and that's what... Yeah. Not loving what you do is what puts people in hospitals.
It was killing me.
I don't care what anybody tells you. It catches up to you. It's like a slow finger in the ass when you have a small asshole and it's tight. It just drains you, and you don't know what's draining you.
Yeah.
And you look around you, and that's what happens. One day you look around, you look at somebody who's 10 years older than you, and they're like, I've been here for 30 years. And you see the scars on his fucking soul and shit, and you're like, I got to quit. And people tell you you're crazy, you're making great money, and, you know, but you're like, I don't want to fucking do it no more.
Yeah.
It's funny because Lee wanted to be a professional gang. And I was hoping by this time I'd be making 2-3 G's just on the 10% he was going to pay me. But he'd fucking leave. He wouldn't sweat it out. He'd lose and go home.
You need a big bankroll.
You got a big bankroll. No, you got millions under that mattress. You got Cougar Ranch. You got those stocks and bonds. You got more money than fucking God. What are you talking about?
Were you trying to count at blackjack?
No, I'm not. It's not that I'm bad at math, but my mom was yelling at me about it today. If I don't like something, I don't put effort into it.
I just don't.
And I was decent at algebra, but not even really passable.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the thing with, like, poker. For some reason, numbers don't really make sense. Like, they make sense. I can do basic math, but when you're trying to be like, okay, do +1, -1 zeros for every card that comes out, and then also make sure no one sees you doing it, and still it doesn't guarantee you're going to win.
That's absolutely right, yeah.
It's tough. Like, I've heard poker is the way to go, but then, I mean, how long did you put into it before you were good?
I was a degenerate gambler like anybody else, Marv. The first 5 years of playing it, I lost, you know, all the time, more than I won. But then I started reading books on poker. You have to read Theory of Poker by David Sklansky. These are all old school books. You got to read a Hold'em for Advanced Players by Mason Malmuth. I'm not promoting these guys. These are the old school poker authors. Nowadays, it's all available on the internet, but if you're not on discussion forums and talking about hands with other really good poker players, you're not really a poker player. You're just a gambler. So I spent as much time studying the game as I did playing it, and then one day, you know, I couldn't beat the biggest games. I beat mid-stakes games, and I was very happy to make just a middle-class living at it. I didn't have big dreams, but I saved up a real good bankroll, and Lee's right. You need to have money behind you to gamble because, God forbid, you have a losing month. You know, you don't want to kill yourself. So once I had a bankroll, I was off, and I didn't do any. I always taught yoga, you know, but poker was always there.
Just make sure you don't gamble with Joey around. He's the kiss of death. Well,
fuck you! I put the yardstick up. I left you there because you were winning.
And
walked
away. And I
walk away because he's winning. I go, let me stake you.
You don't
play?
Change things.
Let me
things
hang out with my brother. Let me stake him. Yeah. I'll sit here for the 10 points and my money back.
Sure.
Let me stake him. I sat there. He was looking at the Vietnamese chick, and he was okay. All of a sudden, she sucked him in. He was in Rambo 2, and I lost my yardstick. I don't know what the fuck happened. I tormented him. You're lucky. I forgot all about it. I'm going to take it out of your check.
Well, first of all, it's a third. You got it. Ridiculous.
He fucking lost. I mean, like that. I turned around, sneezed, and all of a sudden, he's walking to me like, what happened? She took my money. You walked away. He got mad at me because I fucking walked away.
Yeah,
like,
you don't. You never walk away when somebody's winning.
Okay, God, so you're in this for 5 fucking years losing. Now, you're still working at the textile business.
At that time, I was actually teaching Taekwondo. So I've had a bunch of different jobs. At that time, it was a couple years out of college. I studied accounting and decided I didn't want to be an accountant. So I was teaching Taekwondo, my hobby, right? But I started playing poker and I was just addicted to it, basically. I loved it. But then eventually, you know, once I could beat it, it became a job. But I was a degenerate like anybody else. I just lose my paycheck every friggin' weekend. And it was depressing. I remember many times driving home from Atlantic City and taking my poker books and throwing them in a garbage can. You know this shit, right, Lee? At a gas station. You're getting gas. Like, fuck, I'm not doing this anymore. And then 2 weeks later, you go buy the books again. And they're expensive books. And
I threw away all my player's card on the street. I drove to Vegas
to go
for a weekend. I love it. I love my. It's in my blood. My dad's father was like a horses guy.
Yeah.
But like I was going for a weekend. I checked in the hotel. And I think I lost like $700 or $800 in like 2 hours. And I had like another night at the hotel. But the one thing that saved me is that when I always go to the ATM before I go to the casinos, and I don't go to their ATMs because then I would be homeless.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I take what I think I can lose, and I still shouldn't have gambled, but it's just I threw away all my players cards.
Yeah.
On the strip, right by the fucking Denny's.
You're a gambler. I never had a player's card in my life. You know, that's for gamblers. You know, I play poker. I don't play the other games. But a player's card, that means you got a problem.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe. No.
So now you would go to Trump and get there what time at night?
I would leave a Friday, right, at the end of the work day.
Okay, so you wouldn't go during the week.
I would never go. You'll want to play on the weekends because that's when there's more tourists. During the week, it's more locals and kind of like degenerate gamblers that need to play every day. But on the weekends, you got people partying. And that's why when I go to Vegas, I don't go often, but I love to go to Vegas now because that's the only time I really play poker now. And when you beat a tourist in a pot, they give you knuckles. They're having a good time. But when you beat a degenerate in a pot, like at Commerce Casino or in any place in Atlantic City, they scowl at you. They're mad at you. They don't like you. And that's just a bad feeling. You know, over
Commerce
and over
is a
and
scary
over.
Place.
I put a lot of hours into Commerce. Don't like it, and I don't have any plans on going back.
Have you really been to Hollywood Park?
Yeah, I spent a lot of hours in Hollywood Park too, because I would always just chase the best games I could find. And poker wasn't always this big. You know, before Chris Moneymaker won the World Series in 2002, I had to lie about what I was doing because poker was a criminal thing. So. Back in the day, Hollywood Park, that is a dangerous casino. Oh.
My girlfriend lived down the block from it, and yeah. I went once, and it's just...
Yeah, that's not as... You get the private parking if you're going to ever have to go there, but I don't go to casinos anymore, though, so, you know.
So now what year did this computer gambling come out?
Early 2000s. Internet poker kind of came on
the
scene.
And you were living here now?
I was already in California. I was already a yoga teacher for a long time, and... Yeah, so I was kind of right at the tail end of not going to casinos anymore. I couldn't take it. You know, this was before they made all the rooms non-smoking, too. So I would come home smelling a smoke. I don't smoke cigarettes. You know, I smoke weed, but I don't touch tobacco. But you live in that casino, it's all over you. But, probably my early 30s was when internet poker became really big. And I spent probably 8 or 9 years doing almost only that, but still always teaching yoga. And,
You were teaching yoga in Hollywood, you doing it up Runyon Canyon?
I'm known for one thing. Classes in Runyon Canyon. We have donation classes. We've done it for 15 years. We actually have 23 classes a week. It's unbelievable. It used to just to be, I used to teach one class a day for 5 years at 10:30. And then I was actually started making money playing poker, so I started recruiting my friends to teach for me, and we added other classes. So now it's not just me. We have 4 or 5 other real long-time professional yoga teachers, and we have 3 or 4 classes a day, and they're always basically free. But they're really by donation, and people are, even with the economy bad, people are still generous, and you give us a couple bucks, the classes are big enough, and everybody's happy. But playing on PokerStars, I was a sit-and-go maniac. I'd play 24 tables at a time.
On the computer.
I would actually hook my computer up to a big screen TV like you got here, and I'd play with an Xbox controller. I wouldn't use my keypad because I couldn't go fast enough, but with an Xbox controller, you can manipulate the table with one hand, check, call, raise. I actually got arthritis in my hands and elbow from gaming. Crazy.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
And it's all over now. What were you making a year on the computer?
Not a lot. Middle class living. Yeah, I never want to give out any numbers just because whatever, but there's a little bit of gray market thing. But a middle class living. Never getting rich. Saving a little. Never really saved money in my life. Saving a little bit. But it's a nice middle class living. And then you wake up one day and it was gone. You know, the government
and you can't play anymore online?
If you ask people who don't know, they'll tell you that, sure, you can play, but in order to have a game that you can make a living off of, you need to have the whole world or at least multi-millions of people playing, because you got to play a lot of games at the smaller... I play a lot of games at the smaller stakes to make a living, you know, to make a wage. Now, you know, the best we're going to have, I think maybe California will legalize it, and we have about 40 million people here. So that's a good player pool for online poker, but it was better when it was, 7 billion people, when the whole world could go on there. I could play games anytime, day or night. So it's never gonna be like it used to be. I think it used to be online poker was basically like the Wild West. It's just never going to come back like that. But it'll come back in some form, and hopefully the government will regulate it, because we want to be regulated. We want to pay taxes almost up front. But, for whatever reason.
Now, once they stopped the legalized the online gambling, what did you do? What was your next step for gambling, for poker-wise?
Oh, I stopped. I didn't want to go back to the casino. I tried to go back to the casino, but I couldn't deal with the people in the L.A. casinos, And I love California. I love L.A., I love Hollywood, but the people in the casinos, they're rough.
Because it's not, I don't even know how to put it. It's not totally legal here. It's kind of weird. There's no slots.
Yeah, well, like, I can tell you what it is.
And you have to pay. It's like skill games or whatever.
What is this? It's player-backed games. Games where the house takes a percentage of the pot are legal, but you can't play a game, regular game of blackjack where the house gets the winnings. So in poker, if we're all playing together and a pot happens, I get your money, and the house takes a tiny percentage. That's legal. But we can't, like, they can't run a blackjack game where they just play regular blackjack, and if you lose, you lose it to the house. So that's the type of gambling that's legal in California.
And then it's just, it's like, people get, it's like the opposite of jiu-jitsu. People get really upset, especially because I like blackjack because it's simple for me to understand.
Do they have blackjack in L.A.?
Yeah, but like when I was playing at Commerce, you had to pay a dollar a hand to go in. But now there's companies who do that for you, and they take the winnings, I guess. I don't really know how it works. But like if you don't follow the way you're supposed to play, like hit on this hand or stay, I've seen people get yelled at. In Vegas, it's not as bad. Like, I've been at a table.
I got yelled at. I didn't know what I was doing. I had no fucking idea.
Really got yelled at? In Vegas, I've seen some guy get drunk and just like some guy was like, hey, you shouldn't do that. And then he did it again. So everyone literally just left. But I've never seen anyone get yelled at in Vegas. That's too bad. I'm sorry about that.
No, no, no. I was young. I was in Vegas. I didn't know what I was doing. There's two things that have always baffled me about me. Because I'm a fucking criminal. Listen, if I wasn't doing comedy, I'm a criminal. I do stand-up comedy, I act, and I do podcast, and I write a little bit. So that's four things. When I was a criminal, my strengths were I love booking because I could lure a motherfucker. I love stealing drug dealers, robbing drug dealers. You know, I like that shit. There was things that were my forte. I'll tell you what two things were never my forte. Drinking alcohol. I don't know why. Doesn't agree with me from the jump street. And gambling. I grew up in a gambling house. I saw my mother blow thousands on the fucking Yankees and the fucking Red Sox and everything. OTB. You know, OTB is no different than the casinos in L.A. from what I've seen. OTB was off-track betting in New York City. Have you ever gone to OTB?
I don't think I've ever been in, but I've heard it. It's like just a dirty place where take bets.
Oh, my. What I used to do was take the bus on the 78th. I'd get off Port Authority, and I'd walk down to Amsterdam, buy weed, eat Cuban food. And you know what I'd do for 2 hours when I was 21 years old? I'd go to OTB, sit there stoned, and watch. And once I saw the Marlon Brando biography, and he was talking about how he would sit there in a phone booth in New York City, close the phone booth, and make believe he was on the phone, old school, when you had the phone booths that closed, and he'd watch people. I was never so baffled by what I saw at the OTB thing. People shooting coke, people fist fighting. They were fucking animals. Animals. These are people. This is the lowest line of gambler. Because they don't even have time to go to Aqueduct. They don't even have time to go to fucking Belmont Steaks. They don't have time to go to Las Vegas. They're just going to Commerce Casino. They don't give a fuck about the frills. They're just animals. They're just animals.
Horse racing is it's not, I don't know if it's scary, but it's, you meet really interesting people. Like, I was just sitting down, I think it was like at the Golden Nugget, and this old guy, hammered drunk, just came up sitting next to me for like 30 minutes. And we'd be looking at the races, and he would just be calling. He called every, like, literally, like, 7 or 8 races in a row. He called the winner, but he was hammered drunk and probably had no money because he lost all of it. But, like, that's what my grandfather did. My grandfather went to the track.
Every day. Probably every day. Jimmy Lebrano's father goes every day. He's 92 since he retired at 61. He goes to the track every day. When the Meadowlands is moved to somewhere else, that's the only time he doesn't go down there.
How much does he do a day?
These guys are smart. They like, listen, when I fucking had to walk home from the Meadowlands one day, Yogi Steve. I was up 800, and I had to walk back to North Bergen from the Meadowlands, and those cars were doing 90 from me. You know what I learned from that lesson? Only go to the track with $40. And when it's gone, it's gone. and that 40 has to include your clam chowder and your couple beers. Because at the Meadowlands, they got good red clam chowder. But two things that have baffled me. Okay, the drinking, I get. Some people can't do everything. But the gambling is the one that, till this day, I go, how many times we're in Vegas, Lee, and we're fucking sitting there like two jerk-offs, sitting there going, oh, I want to do this. I'm going to do that. And at the end of the week, what do? We don't do dick. We don't do fucking dick.
Right.
Or the ones we did like, we're going to lose anyway. like after the fights. Remember we went there one time?
Sports betting is like, it's the worst because you, especially baseball, because there's so many games and the games are so freaking long.
Think about basketball, fucking football. And now they've put, listen, when Steve and I were young men, it was Saturday college and Sunday pro and Monday night football. That's it. All of a sudden they got cute and they added Sunday night at 8 o'clock. They would just play with it on Sunday nights every 4 or 5 weeks. Then they kept that. Then ESPN started Thursday night college football. And when it's not college, it's fucking, it's football, it's college, it's pro.
Right. Now they have pro.
Yeah, pro on Thursday. Yeah. So, you know, I always looked at it as on Thursday is when they go get Jesus and they drag him and they bit slap him. Then Saturday, how many college games you got? For every college games you got, Jesus gets a kick to the fucking stomach. There's got to be 80 fucking college games. That's Saturday. And then Sunday, early game, 11, that's the fucking nail. The other nail is the 4 o'clock game. Then the family game is the nail through the head. And then the fucking Monday night game is a stab through the heart and Jesus was dead. That's what they do to the American gambler without them even knowing it. They're what's Monday night? It's college basketball night. 2 games every Monday night on ESPN. Those doubleheaders. Who do you think stays up and watch those? Yeah, 50% of them are fans. But the other 50% are degenerate fucking gamblers.
Yeah, because it feels so good when you win. And you always win. One of the first times you go, you're going to leave. Like, that's why I went back.
Oh, yeah, you're going to always win the first 3 fucking times. That's how they suck you in. It's like fate sucks you in.
Well, I guess either of you guys have never been to a GA meeting. You've never seen what that looks like. It's all many, it's like half online poker players, half old dudes hooked on sports betting. Because of that long sweat. You know what the sweat is? Like, the buildup. That's why people like it. That's why people like sports betting. But it's even harder to beat than poker, from what I understand. So, if you can afford it, do it. But
so the sports betting, what is it? It's worse than poker?
It's one of the things you could do for a living professionally, but so few people do it. Very few people make a living in poker, and even less people make a living in sports.
That'll shut you up. That was the first. Growing up, it was the track with my mom and the Yankees and baseball. And there was something about losing. I didn't like. Numbers were always safe. I put $5 on a number, I win fucking $2,500. I lose $5, and I move on. When I was in the 8th grade, me and Whitey O'Donnell used to bet $25 games 5 times. 5 times on the Knicks. And then they put Phil Jackson in, and I have a fucking heart attack. Because when they put Phil Jackson in, that means the game was over. God damn it. Good night, Whitey. Good night, this motherfucker. And we would lose 15 apiece a week or 22 a week. And then I forgot all about gambling. And then my buddy Jimmy Bender turned me on to the sheets. He sat me down at Mr. Biggs in Hoboken and showed me how to do the betting slips. Maybe that was in the 8th grade.
What are betting slips?
The sheets, the college sheets with the college football on top and the pro football on the bottom. So let's say you got to go 4 for 4 to win any money.
Oh, parlays.
So parlay cards. So it's $1 for 4 for 4, you get $6. Who needs $6?
Right.
I don't want $6. I'm going to go 13 for they love those. That's like giving your dollar away.
You can bet in I don't know if it's Nevada or Vegas. Token Larry was showing me. They have an app now for on your phone where you can sports bet anywhere. Just from anywhere now. And it's scary. Like it's – and –
Will you give them a credit card?
Probably. Or you have maybe you have like a you start out an account. I don't. Well, they have online casinos now, like Bovada and all that stuff. But it's crazy. And that's the thing that stopped me from doing it is the older gamblers always have stories of – like this one guy, when I went to the UFC with you, I stayed at a different hotel. This guy was complaining to the dealers that the sports book wouldn't take his bet. Like 5 minutes before, and of course the team had won, and it's always like, oh, if this one hand had gone differently.
Yeah, well, those fucking guys just pathetic fucking losers. There's guys that just, you know, if I would have made it, I called fucking Yogi Steve, he didn't answer the phone. Fucking, he should give me the fucking money. You know, there's always those jerk offs. You know, I didn't do anything else all through high school. Whatever. I went to the track with Jimmy Bender's father from time to time, shit like that. But I moved in with this Puerto Rican kid named Fernie Basasudo. I love Fernie till this day. We don't talk no more. He's mad at me for 30 years from that time. And I got to tell you something, Steve, and I think back, that October to that February was possibly one of the funniest times of my life. And I was gambling my ass off. And we would bet every night, Lee, 40 times. So 10 times is what, 50? Yeah, 200 a game.
Oh.
Four 40-timers and two 40-time parlays. That's like just fucking yourself in the
ass. Wait, you have to win 40 games?
You have to win two games. Each game is 40 times. It's 200. So two games is 800, right?
Right.
No, it's 400. And then I bet a 40-time parlay, which a 10-time parlay is 70 to win 130.
I thought you said you didn't like gambling. I don't even know this stuff. This is serious degenerate gambler stuff.
This is when I was. this is my running. So me and Fernie would gamble during the week. And I know Timmy's going to listen to this and laugh because me and Fernie were fine until one day me and these other guys, Stinky, were gambling. And Fernie was listening. And Fernie, this poor Puerto Rican kid, was like you ever see when somebody, it's like when that person asks about heroin for the first time and you're in the room and they should freeze that and show it to him 10 years later and see what that question asked. Like, I'll never forget Fernie at Joe and Mary still looking at me and Stinky and going, what's this gambling you guys do? Fernie was no Phi Beta Kappa. Fernie was no Phi Beta Kappa. He was big. You should have seen the size of this kid. Naturally. From 16, the summer from 16 to 17, he didn't leave the house. All he did was behind the necks, front of the necks, squats and bench, five sets of six with 1,000 pounds, and he ate Cuban food. You have no idea what happens when you just eat black beans and rice and steak every night. Fernie was a sweetheart. And Fernie, I remember him asking this, and as he's asking me, I'm like, this guy doesn't know what he's getting into. And sure enough, he started getting the paper, and he started throwing his... No, he didn't throw a bet. And you ready for this? He waited. And his first bet, I still remember it. Pittsburgh against Seattle, and somebody against somebody else. First game, he won big. First bet he ever put in. How much was the first time you put in a bet? What was the size of it?
My first bet was small. You know, I played craps for the first time in Atlantic City when I was 13. My first bet was $5 with $10 in the behind it. $15.
And how about
bucks.
You?
Probably blackjack. Oh, I know. I remember. I went down to visit my dad. I think. It was either my dad in Florida at the Seminole Hard Rock, or up here in Vegas. I forget, but it was like I was paying at most $15 hands.
Fernie's first bet on the phone was $1,000 parlay.
Nice. Well, you won.
$1,000. Thousand fucking dollars. That's what he when he told me that, I go, hold on 1 second. I had to talk to Timmy's dad. Timmy, you're not going to believe this. He wants to put $1,000. So he put $1,000 on a game. It was the parlay. So he had to win two games, guys. So now the first game wins, and we're excited. I come in, and I go, Fernie, did you win? Yeah, yeah, and I bet that first game. But the second game he bet was Pittsburgh-Seattle. Pittsburgh was giving Seattle 3 points. He took, at the end of the first quarter, Pittsburgh was winning 28-0. We both just went to sleep. I felt so bad for him. He woke up. Seattle came back and beat Pittsburgh 29-28 with a minute left to go in the game. Fernie won $1,000 parlay.
So how much did he win? Like $10,000?
Like, what's 10 times 140?
$14,000.
It was even more. It was even more. It was way more. It was way more. And Mr. H said, come down and pick up the money on Sunday night. I'll never forget that. It must have been 9 o'clock at night. I still remember he had a leather jacket on. And he goes, what do you want to do? This is the first bet he put in. I go, let's go to Piccolissimo up in Fort Lee. And let's get a fucking lobster fra Diablo. You ever had lobster fra Diablo, Fernie?
No, sir.
No, Fernie. He goes, no, I never had lobster. We're 18. This kid never had a fucking lobster. I take him up there. They bring a finger bowl to dip the fingers and wash it. I'll never forget. He picked it up and drank it. He had never been it. But to make a long story short, Fernie and I went on a run. That started that October, and it was me, Fernie, Stinky. It was our little crew, and it was every night, Yogi Steve, every night. And then that's when me and another friend of ours, Gerard, had to go down to Hudson County Park and mug gay guys. That's what we used to have to do, set up fucking gay. This is crazy. This is 1982. I'm 19 years old. I just got out of high school. Guys, I got nothing going on, and I'm in a bar gambling. I'm selling drugs. I'm working for a bookie in the daytimes doing numbers on 118th Street. This is fucking crazy. And I am a fucking degenerate. And I'm losing every week. Every Thursday, I got to give this fucking guy 700. And you know when I made it? Wednesday nights. Like, I'd be dead broke. I didn't have 700 for nobody. I was just living on fumes. Degenerate gambler lies, ducking, loan sharks. We borrowed money from this fucking... And I remember I got into such a fucking hole with the bookies. Fernie was all... By that time, Fernie, I think, lost $50,000 on the Super Bowl. Miami Dolphins against the Killer Bees. Whoever the Killer Bees played in 82. Miami against somebody. He bet... With the Redskins! The Redskins. He bet his whole bankroll, plus he sat on everybody's action. He lost everything. That kid had to go get... He had to go work for his father from 6 to 2... And then he pumped gas from 4 to 12. He did that for 8 months to get himself out of the hole.
Wow.
Jesus.
That was the biggest lesson. And I remember that I owed his bookie, like, I think I lost like $2,000, and I gave the bookie $1,200. I'm like, I'm not giving him another dollar. The guy lived in Edgewater. And I owed the bookie $800, and I split to Colorado. And Fernie paid his $40,000 to the guy. But when he owed him $800, he goes, I'm not giving you the last $800. Coco didn't pay you. Get it from Coco, and then I'll pay you the $800. The guy goes, I don't even want it. You paid me $40,000. What do I care about $800? That was the most horrible thing I witnessed. He didn't even talk. Like the last month or two I lived with him, he didn't even talk. He was just shattered. He had to go to his dad. His dad had to borrow money from a bank. And he was 19. This was his introduction. And I bumped into him and years later. You know what he told me? He never wants sports again.
That's what I wanted to know, is what happened to the guy.
He never wants
sports. That's fantastic. Then you know what? That's a win. Because a lifetime of gambling and losing like that's more expensive.
He never. And you want me to tell you something? He never recovered from that. Because after that, while he was doing that, he was selling blow. But he would cut his coke so much that it was like doing. I used to torch him. That sheetrock. Sheetrock dust. You wouldn't be able to talk. After you did his coke, he'd say, how is it? You're like, because your mouth would stick the fucking together. And from there, he got on heroin, and he never really recovered. He's not even on Facebook, but his little brother's on Facebook. And I talked to him very lightly, and I apologized to the brother for when I lived with him, how my behavior. And he goes, hey, your mom had just died. I couldn't imagine. And about a month ago, he posted pictures of Fernie, and Fernie don't look too good. He don't look too fucking healthy. But that was my sports betting thing. I never... really fucked around with sports because of Fernie, and I just didn't like what it did to me. It made me stupid. Made me fucking stupid. I remember a snowstorm, a big snowstorm in 83. I mean, 3 feet of snow in Jersey, and you couldn't get the newspaper. In those days, you couldn't go online and get the lines. You lived off the Daily News. The Post made their own lines, but the Daily News were the original lines from Vegas that morning. So this is 30 years ago, guys. Don't quote me on this. This is 1982. So I remember that time when I remember just picking up the phone and calling the bookie and going, what do you got? And him reading the things to me and me telling him the bets. And I remember one of the bets I made on that snowy fucking February, March night, whatever the fuck it was like Iona giving Ithaca like 49 points, like a game that nobody was watching, you know? And Warner Wolf, do you remember who Warner Wolf was?
Of course.
He was a sportscaster in New York. I swear to God, Lee, I'm at a bar. I got a couple bumps in me. I'm getting 49 points, Lee. Who gets 49 points on a Friday night college basketball game and loses? 49 points I'm getting, Lee.
So for people who don't know, that means you could have lost by anything other than like less than 49 points. You would have won.
If they would have beat us 49-1, I would have fucking covered the spread. Okay? Now, it's a Division II basketball game. It's a 49-point spread. It's Friday night. I'm at a bar with three or four of my gorilla buddies. We fronted a couple grams of blow. We're drinking on the tab like fucking broke. And Warner Wolf comes on the sports thing, and he goes, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. If you had Iona in the 49, you're still a loser. That's what he said. That's exactly what his words were. I don't know if it was Iona. It was something like Holy Cross getting 49 at home. It was like a, what do you call those colleges? Harvard?
Ivy League.
Ivy League. It was like an Ivy League game. And I'll never forget that's what he opened up with. That's how much of a loser I was. I was getting 49 points and still. And then I had one last score. I had this bookie I was going to rob. I had to go give him 800, and he opened up a fucking closet in front of me, Yogi Steve. Okay, linen closet, and the fucking tops, $100 bills, the middle were 50s. It was all the way down. It was like a cash register in his wall. In my mind, that motherfucker didn't know he was going down. He was going down one way or another. And I fucking cased that guy for 3 weeks. I had my buddies lined. I had a plane ticket ready to go. I was going to rob him, go do an A-ball, and go right to Newark Airport. And my hand got caught in the fucking barbed wire right there behind Safeway Supermarket. And it ripped that way, shit. And that way the shit was coming out of my hands. They said I'd never move my fucking fingers again. I left my glove on, and I went to the bar that night and drank and did blow with my fucked up hand. I didn't go to the hospital till the next fucking day. That was this is all my gambling shit. This is why I don't gamble. So it cost me 6 months of my life of nothing but frustration, going to bed thinking that you're broke and you have to get up and pay this guy the next day. And you have to give him the money by 2:00.
Do you think it's a better feeling when you win or a worse feeling when you lose? Like, which is stronger? Because there's nothing greater than winning, but losing, and you just get depressed immediately.
If you know anything about me, you know I've read about it over the years. And it's like a psychological thing. Like, this, you know who was a degenerate gambler? John Gotti. But they said his gambling got to the point where he was, you know, he couldn't live a day without telling you how much he lost. It becomes an addiction to lose after a while.
Jesus.
Like, you just go, and I can't. One of the hardest things ever in my life, listen, Lee, tell these people, am I cheap?
No.
I don't give a fuck about money. But I'll tell you what I do give a fuck is when I work for my money and I got to go give it to a bookie. If I'm selling blow and I'm mugging bitches and I'm robbing drug dealers, I don't give a fuck. When money comes, that's part of doing business. That's a street fake. That's just somebody I'm paying, so if something ever goes down, he knows I'm solid. He'll have my back. But besides that, if I'm working, if I got to get up at 8 in the morning and go work, I'm going to give my money to a fucking bookie on a Thursday night. You're fucking crazy.
Screw that.
You're fucking crazy.
What do you think, Steve? Was it better when you won or worse when you lost?
When you play a lot, even if you're a winning player for a long period of time, I think what universally happens is that the losses hurt more, and the wins you kind of just expect to win, so you don't really get much pleasure from them anymore. It's always good to make money, but it almost becomes just like a regular business, but the losses always hurt. And even if you're a winning player, you're going to lose at least 40-45% of the time you sit down to play, you're going to lose. So that's your life. Like losing almost half the time, but still eking out a win. So yeah, don't gamble for fun, or gamble because you win. But it's good that you don't do it anymore.
People have told me the way to do it is to and you've told me too, is to find one game or wait until a table at blackjack is hot and go. Because when I go to Vegas with Paula, we stayed at the Trump last time because if I wake up at 3 a.m, I'll go down and play. And the more times you play, you're more likely to lose. Like, that's why there's this one dealer at the Venetian, this black lady, who it's like she's on speed. She just doesn't stop. So the more hands you play, that's why the smaller decks are better, because they have to shuffle and there's less time, there's less hands. So that's essentially what I've been told.
We had this discussion 2 weeks ago. We discussed your friend that you got an astrologer.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. If you know anything about life, it's peaks and valleys. You know, God bless you if you, from 21 to 65, you make $100,000 a year. God bless you in this life. You're going to have bad years, you're going to have good years. Here's my philosophy on gambling. You hit big, you walk the fuck away.
Right.
Who walks away, Steve?
Well, you know what? If you're winning, you want to stay and keep winning, but you should kind of say, look, I'm up 3,000 now. If I slip back to 2, that's good. I should leave. But what if that happens in the first 25 minutes? That's not the way people gamble. So you just got to bring money you can afford to lose and just hope for the best and, try to enjoy it.
When you play poker,
yeah,
it's a fucking long journey, and you're hoping for it's a marathon.
It's called a grind for a reason. And I consider myself a grinder in the way I eat and train. Everything I do, it's about just chipping away small edges. You know, I've been never greedy as a poker player. I just didn't want to win all the money. I just wanted a little from you and a little from you, a little from the other guy. But it's still a grind no matter what. It becomes a work. But at the highest level, it's the dream job, I'm sure. You know, if you're these guys that are famous for it, Phil Ivey and Tom Dwan.
Do you watch it on TV? It's
funny you ask. I started watching again recently because I really learned by making VH tapes of before TiVo and everything of, World Poker Tour.
They're scumbags.
I had every episode memorized. But anyhow, I learned from TV, and I still, you know what? There, I think you got to be highly intelligent to be one of those dudes.
Not the poker players, the people who produce the show.
I believe it. Yeah, I don't know much about that.
For people who don't know, when you're in TV or movies, the best thing, you want to work a union gig, and that's a union gig for editors, which is really rare. And when I left for assistant editors, they were. Union is $1,800, I think, something like that, a week. They wanted to pay $8.95 a week, which isn't even what a PA makes.
Well, yeah, well, TV poker is not what it used to be. It's a very small little niche now. But yeah, I've been watching it, and it's pretty good, man. These kids are amazing at like 25. They understand the game almost pretty much, you know, at an unbelievable level. And they're fun to watch play, but, you know.
I never had the patience to sit.
That's all about
it. I got invited to a couple poker things early, and I went, and I'm like, okay. So now what? I'm here an hour. Now I got to keep fucking sitting here.
An hour is nothing. You go hours.
There's shit going on out there. I got to go.
Yeah.
That's the other thing that I'm even getting bothered about sometimes, lifting. Like being inside. Like, I don't know.
Come to the park. We'll train at the park.
Yeah, I was always an outside guy. That's what saved me about games. Like, I've never, as a child, I played Monopoly a few times. Once you got Park Place and the other, what's the high level ones? Boardwalk Empire and the other one?
Yeah.
I'm done. I never got a hotel in my life. Before people started getting hotels, I abandoned shit. You know, I was never.
I never once finished a game of Monopoly until this year, and it wasn't even real Monopoly. It was Pug Monopoly.
Pug Monopoly? What the hell is that? With pugs?
Yeah, my girlfriend got it for her birthday.
Oh my God.
She likes pugs. It's just it's a Monopoly board with pug faces on it.
Very nice.
It's just when people I didn't know this about you. It's always been very intriguing to me when you said you made a living for 8 years. I give a professional gambler a lot of props because I tried to do it and I didn't even know where the fuck to start and where the fuck to end. I wish I had the time to go scout football teams and make believe I knew what I was doing to cut the percentages even low. But you and I both know that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just something to it.
You have such a varied life. You're into so much. I can't believe how much you're telling me how you're traveling for work and everything and working all day. When you're into poker and you make a living at it, that's all you do. But now with kettlebelling and training, that's all I'm focused on. So that's all I do now, too.
So I want to know how you got rid of this gambler thing you had living inside of you.
I know. Well, you know,
because you don't fucking get rid of it through kettlebells.
Because it was already a job by the time it was over. By the time they turned it off, basically in 2011, I was already like just going to a job. And the first couple of weeks when it was over, I was like, this is great. Felt like vacation. And then until you realize it's not coming back. So I got lucky, I guess, because I think most gamblers' stories are not good.
Not good.
And I'm friends with all these guys, and you know they're also like on Facebook, not looking well. Some guys escape it, some guys don't. But you know, we'll see if it comes back online. I'm happy to play there again, but I'll play in Vegas one day. We'll go whenever you're ready. That's the one place I like to go to.
Ari was a big poker player for a while. And he would go to those daytime tournaments.
Yeah, yeah.
I think L.A. casinos and stuff, and he got away from it. I you know, he got so busy with comedy and the whole thing that you just, like you said, it's got to be, I guess, him and his buddy, my old agent, used to go to Vegas and do the tournaments for the weekend.
Yeah.
I admire you guys. That's why I'm asking you all these fucking questions.
You know, I appreciate it. I have good memories of the game, and it taught me a lot, actually, about life because you get used to not winning every time you do everything. But it's hopefully if you win a little more than you lose, then you're a winner. So, No, I really appreciate it. That was a fun time, you know. Hey, I'm going to have a game at my place. You can play $25 max, total buy-in, and I'll teach while we play.
I don't have an idea what you say when you say buy-in. I know that
you won't lose more
than
$25.
You say check.
I forgot about that. For like 6 months, my high school buddies and I had a poker night every, and I don't think I ever won once. I was, because it's just, they're like, correct me if I'm wrong, but you probably know every possible hand you could have and what you're supposed to do
90%
with that hand.
When there's a full table of players with 8 or 9 people, 90% of my decisions will usually be like completely automatic because you've just seen that situation many times. Maybe 10% of them you got to think for a couple moments. So, we're a little. But the thing is, you can still beat a good player because there's a lot of luck involved. And, you know, the weaker players win all the time. That's why people love poker.
You know, on TV where it says like the percentage you have a chance of winning.
Of course, yeah.
Do players know that when they're playing, they're like, roughly like I have like a 1 in 10 chance of winning?
Yeah, usually we look at it as like either a coin flip 50-50, you know, a pair versus two overcards, something like that. Or we know that if one guy's got ace king, the other guy's ace queen, we're about like 3-1, meaning like one out of every four times we'll get lucky and beat that hand.
Okay.
But those stats are not that important because it's all about if the money's all in and the cards are turned up. That's tournament poker, remember. Real live poker, that doesn't happen too often because in a tournament, once you're out of chips, you're out of chips. But in a regular game, like in a casino that's not a tournament, 90% of poker is regular cash games. You go into your pocket, you go bust, you get more. So that's like real, you know, real cash poker. Tournament poker is different because you're all in a little more frequently, so that's why they show those stats. But if you want to learn how to play and learn the actions without having to go to a game, just go to PokerStars.net and play for free. I'm not promoting them, but hey, PokerStars, I used to love you guys. But you never lost any money when that place shut down due to the shutdown. We got our money out easily.
I used to play poker on the Soprano webpage. If you go to HBO.com and you go to the Sopranos,
that exists.
They have it's still up.
Is it really?
It's still up. Go look.
You can learn on that. You can learn the actions.
Yeah,
on there
play,
too.
I would do check. They start you with $10,000. Yep. And I got it up to 60 a couple times, but I knew in my head I wasn't ready for no fucking casino, you know?
Yeah.
The thing I enjoyed the most about gambling, I got to be honest with you, it's the characters that I met. I've forgotten all of them now, but I was giggling here when you were telling your story. You know, you're from Jersey, I'm from Jersey.
You know,
there's some stuff that only happens in Jersey. Like people
Atlantic City, baby.
I was never in Atlantic. You know, I didn't go to Atlantic City until the first time.
That's so great.
Maybe
good.
10 years ago with Jimmy Burkle, we lived down the shore. He's dead now. God bless his soul. And we went to his house, and all of a sudden he goes, let's just go to Atlantic City and eat crab legs. Alaskan. It was like a Tuesday. Empty. I don't know where we went. It was all you could eat crab legs. And then I got a call from Linda Rowe to drive up to Connecticut at like 5 and do a gig at 8 o'clock. I was headlining. And I remember driving all the way to Connecticut, some Boar's Head. And that's the first. And then I went with Rogan one time to do the Borgata, and everybody kept telling me, "Oh, wait till you go to the Borgata; it's beautiful." That place sucked. I could smell cologne in my room. Once I smell cologne in my room, that's the end of the fucking party. Is it still up?
I can't find it now. No, but I am also high.
HBO.com.
So. Uh-oh.
Yeah, no, I looked at it.
Wow, they used to have it, and that's how. But one night I'm in a Jersey bar. I'm 19. I'm a complete loser. I'm drinking on a tab. I'm gambling. You know, I'm jonesing for a line. I'm just waiting for a pigeon to come in. And this kid comes in, this Busnich kid. And he's a big kid. He's older than me. He played basketball. And he brought in a guy that was bigger than him, you know. And I'm just sitting there. They said hello. I said hello. And all of a sudden, the guy I lived with came in. His name was Mike Brennan. He was hell on wheels. And he had a black eye. When somebody comes into a bar in Jersey and they already have a black eye, it's going to be a good night. And he gives me a bump in the bathroom. We're out. We're drinking Bud cans, you know. And all of a sudden, Busnich, they're talking about gambling. And Mike's aggravated, and they're fucking pissed. And Mike's tough as nails. And they're pissing him off. They're pissing him off. They're pissing him off. And they're talking about how good a gambler's there. And he goes, so how the fuck are you guys good gamblers? And this Busnich guy goes in his pocket. This Busnich goes in his pocket and gives Mike this fucking thing that you remember in the 80s, you get these things in the mail that you could open up. It was like a map. And when you got it, it was maybe the size of this, Lee. But like they had them for exercises and shit, so you could take them to the gym. So it would be something small, but you could open it up. And it became like this fucking map. And it was Kyle Rote Jr. And I'll never forget that. And it was his system to gamble. Right, how to become a millionaire with his simple steps.
Oh man!
And my buddy Mike opens it up and looks on. He's like, Conroe Jr. Oh, now Mike wasn't tight with these guys. It's like going to a bar for the first time and meeting those guys at the bar and just talking. And all of a sudden Mike's looking on. He goes, this is fucking garbage. And he just throws the paper at the guy's face. The guy jumped over. Mike threw a Budweiser can at him and exploded and shit. I think I was on acid. That's right. I was on acid because that's what... I remember going home going, when you hit him with the Budweiser can and it blew up, that was the end of the fucking... I couldn't even breathe after that. I was laughing so hard. Kid went down. The kid he was with went down just on purpose. You know, like when your friend just goes down. Oh, my God, I got hit. No, you didn't. He just went down, and we just ran the fuck out of it. The next day, we went back, and Lila busted our balls. Where's Tony Bennett, cocksucker? You know, man, this thing. Happy birthday, Tony Bennett. You're like fucking 90, and you're still slinging dick. I went to see that Amy Winehouse thing, and he's in that. And she's telling him how she's nervous, and he just calms her down.
Guys, ambush me with these edibles, huh?
You like these, huh?
Yeah, it's going to be a good story coming on this show, that's for sure.
Let me tell you something. You got to eat this Cordova edible.
I'm not
over
eating
that
anything
one.
Else.
You ready for a Cordova, Lee?
No.
Just a little bite. You said you
it says 10 doses on there, by the way.
All right, fine.
What the fuck?
Take like a tiny bite.
A little tiny bite.
I'll take
bite.
A
right
take a.
Look at that right there. This is a ceremony tonight. It's a party, fellas. It's a celebration.
For what?
It's Monday. You lived another fucking day. How many times you get up in the morning and say, thank God he gave me another fucking day?
Guy doesn't know how to take a small bite.
That's good. He's a soldier.
Yeah.
He can handle it.
Yeah.
Fucking who's better than you? No, I really appreciate this gambling stuff because I've always been baffled why today I don't pick up the phone and put a sports bet in. Why
this is really
the last time?
Really tasty chocolate weed.
Yeah, it is. It is pretty
good.
Last time we ate this, we seen the fucking devil. It was we split 1,000 milligrams. This company makes 1,000 milligrams. Why would you make 1,000 milligram edible for fucking gorillas like myself? And Mr. Syed, you know his dad's coming on Wednesday? We're getting fucked up all weekend here in this
fucking place.
I'm getting an extra load of stuff.
And when you take this type of dose, you don't wake up tired in the morning. You wake up fresh and ready to go. So it fucks me up pretty good.
I call him up at 8:01. He's a Marine. He's a Jewish Marine. You understand me?
Yeah, you drink coffee?
He doesn't drink dick.
No, I really...
Good for you.
Well, I drink way too much diet soda.
That's bad.
Yes, it is. Sometimes I feel a little bit high still in the morning, but it's a lot better than being hungover.
Absolutely, for sure. No, I do a lot of it. I eat a lot of it. I know.
When I split the 1,000 milligram, I
That's
puked.
That's fucking crazy.
I was in my kitchen.
He ate tortellini that was expired.
It wasn't the tortellini.
The last time I gave him good edibles, he went to get wholesale sushi in Laurel Canyon. He got sick all over his apartment.
Oh my God. I was having cold sweats leaning up against my fridge. It was like the Breaking Bad scene where Walt's like passing out or whatever. I was having cold sweats. My mind was, I don't even remember what I was thinking about. And I just puked into my trash. And it helped. But.
I puked 3 times off edibles, and not in the last couple of years I haven't puked.
It was weird.
Since the banana bread,
really?
I haven't puked.
Really?
That was the last time I barked right on Chandler. I had to pull over. The water was green. People were beeping at me. You know me. I didn't go by the tree. I just opened my car door and started barfing old school Jersey style. If I'm puking, you're watching.
Fuck yeah.
It was weird though at the live podcast. He gave me a third one, and it just kind of like turned off. Have you ever gotten too high, and it just stopped getting you high?
Yeah, I mean, I got to a point where I smoke enough for weed doesn't basically work anymore.
Not even that. Like I've taken some edibles that I think my body is like it's like a safety mechanism. It knows that I could die from it.
So it
just stops.
I think people have been trying to kill themselves with weed for millions of years or however long, right? And it's never happened. So you get extremely sick, but it's virtually guaranteed you won't die. But I don't want to feel that sick. So
one fucking idiot. It just happened.
What? Somebody
in Colorado. This guy, idiot jumped off the out of a balcony with 10 milligrams.
That's his brain that killed him.
Yeah, it was 10 milligrams.
That's somebody predisposed to it. I won't. You know, that's going to be a hard sell.
Yeah. That was a suicide fucking note.
Yeah.
I ate reefer. No, you didn't. You've been fucked up for years, you little cocksucker. Well,
if a person doesn't drink, they're way ahead of the game in everything. You know, if you're not into drinking heavily, it's like you can get away with weed and junk. I think the drinking thing is what causes people to kill themselves, and I'm a real big believer in people being sober. So, whatever.
That was the hardest part for me losing weight, is that everyone would say when you stop drinking, you're going to lose weight. I never drank, so I never really had those calories.
Well, you drink and diet soda, man. Let me tell you something. That fucks people up. It fucks up your appetite up. It makes you hungry for other sweets, so... Drink coffee, man. Coffee's good.
I've never liked it, and it always bugged me. I went to school in downtown Boston, and people would be late but coming in with Dunkin' Donuts. And I'm like, what? And then it always bugs me that, like, if you go somewhere, they could give you a bad cup of coffee. If I go to 7-Eleven, unless for some reason it's flat, I'm going to get a good Diet Coke. But I am trying to cut it. But it really...
You're a monster. You're a savage, man.
Oh,
that's
my God.
Crazy.
Let me tell you something, guys. I'm prehistoric. I have a certain work ethic. And either you have that work ethic or you don't. And it includes a lot of things. You know, the people that you want to work Saturday, I can't. I'm going down the shore. I'll bust your fucking head. Unless you're eating at Trump's table, everybody works on Saturday. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I have
a, I work every day.
And, you know what? I'm not a judgmental person, but I will judge you by your work ethic. Fuck, because I know it carries into everything else.
Especially for a grown-up, a man, you know, who's not 20, or whatever, you know, whatever.
When I was 21, 22, and I'd see people drinking coffee, smoking a cigarette, I'd want to go up to them and kick them in the stomach and fuck them. Yeah. When I'd see people sitting there at 8 in the morning like this and talking, it would make my blood boil. I did not understand it. My world, you got a buttered roll and a Coke, a can of Coke, and you ate on the move. Yeah. I didn't know nothing about three eggs. Yeah, my mom made good Cuban breakfasts, but once mommy died, I wasn't into cereal. I wasn't into Captain Crunch. There's nothing better than a buttered roll. For a while, I got into the real juiced up, the jelly and cream cheese.
Yeah,
on a fucking oh my god, cream cheese and jelly on a fucking
bagel.
On a fucking on a seed, poppy seed roll.
On a roll, really? I don't want
to. You know how many pounds cream cheese every day puts on you for breakfast? It fucking kills you. I was eating that shit with a Coke or a Yoo-Hoo. I'm a Yoo-Hoo dog, old school. I gotta stay away from that liquor store right by my house. They got the big Yoos, and they put it in the beer cabinet. They keep those Yoos fucking cold. They don't around. But I didn't.
It's just weird, and it's expensive, too. People spend $15-$20. If you get 2-3 coffees, that's at least $12, right? Aren't they expensive?
And I didn't drink coffee, Lee, till maybe 10 years ago. So don't worry. I just didn't get
but that's
I didn't. I didn't understand that concept.
You would have, you know, it's once you get hooked on it, it's pretty hard to get off.
I love it. I love
it, too.
I love my black coffee with some fake fucking sweetener that Honest sends me. It's tremendous. Perfect. And I only do one cup in the morning. But I'm hooked on those flat whites from fucking Starbucks at night. They put a little, you go home, you get a little extra energy to make some notes about your day. I watch something on Netflix, and I'm in the crib. Coffee lifts me, but it drops me real quick from the 30 years of doing
blow. Well, that's good.
No, I like all that stuff. Yeah, so now we're done with gambling. That's it with gambling. You don't put nothing in from time to time?
No, I mean, I might have like a small home game with friends. I actually prefer to play it and teach and talk about the hands while we do it. I don't want to play for real money against my friends.
All right, I'll come over one night. Then. Awesome. And the $25 doesn't bother me. It's always been the patience of sitting down. I've never really had the patience.
I give you a different experience because I do kind of like, you know, I like, you know, I'm an armchair educator, and I feel like I have a good understanding of poker and make it fun, you know, because there's a lot of stress playing for real money against strangers.
It seems like it'd be a great game for a stoner.
It's an awesome game for a stoner, and a lot of the top players, I'm sure, smoke. But, you know, it just depends, you know, as long as, you know what you're doing. And edibles, I don't know, man. I never messed with this stuff when I played. I was just smoking regular herb when I was playing online poker. This shit I would probably not mess with. But you can adapt to it. That's what I know about cannabis. Like, the more you eat... You guys are used to these edibles. I'm not used to them yet, but I feel great. I mean, luckily, I came in with a pretty high tolerance anyhow.
I love them. I love the effect.
Yeah.
I love the different feels. Sometimes you eat one and one's another. And you want me to tell you something, Lee? The best edibles you ever get are the ones I make at home. Because I go to Ventura and get some high-level weed.
How do you make the butter?
I just get regular butter, cut the weed up, let that weed dry, cut that motherfucker up with a scissor, right, and... keep the weed low, very low, because if the weed burns, then you're in no danger. Maybe a little taste of olive oil in that motherfucker. And I'll put little chunks of weed in there and squeeze it with the spoon and get that. When that butter turns nice and green, I keep taking that weed out. I push it to the top. And I string that butter and I put more butter on that weed. And I hit that motherfucker with a fucking spoon, old school. And I get a couple fucking, like a cup of that green butter. And I take that thing and I put it in the brownie mix. And I mix that motherfucker all up, and I put them. I have fucking hallucinated on my own brownies.
That's the highest I've ever been is on a brownie. I went to Old Orchard Beach with some friends, and I was sitting maybe 2 feet outside of the umbrella for literally like 8 hours. I was purple at the end of the day.
I love it. I wouldn't know a life if I have to. I'd do it all over again. Like I would have stayed away from coke, booze all over again, pills.
Yeah,
I loved the calming effect of marijuana it had on me. It worked for me. It worked for my lifestyle at the time. I'm an only child, so I'm in my head. You're in your fucking head. You're thinking. People talk to me sometimes, and I'm somewhere else. Do you know I don't hear you in class?
I understand.
I can't hear you. I'm half deaf as it is.
Yeah, but you follow along. You get good. You take good cues. You see what's happening, and you just do it.
Yeah, you just do it.
Yeah, yeah. Let's get to that karate training. No shit. You know, I had to keep your eyes forward and listen. Oh, this guy's doing something that looks like that. This guy's doing something I'll do about that. And you pretty much get it right every time.
That's weird. Before we came in, we spoke about, I started this whole journey in 2009. I was 418 pounds. I could only walk 3 minutes up a treadmill on 0.5. 3 minutes. The trainer at the YMCA pushed the button off and said, can I talk to you in private? You got to quit smoking cigarettes, and you have to just walk around the neighborhood and then come back and see me. Very fucking embarrassing. You know, it's all-time embarrassing, but I knew from my younger years of working out, and I hit the bag, and I'd ride the bicycle. It was the easy way out. I incorporated swimming. I never dreamed of the weights. I always had this whole thing about the weights. About 6 months ago, I was talking to a guy, and he goes, my father lost a bunch of weight at 55. By doing bench press, by doing bodybuilding exercises, but still combining the strength building exercises, throwing deadlifts in there, squats, and bench presses heavy. You still would do flies and stuff like that. I tell you what, I started doing them again. It refreshed me all over again. I loved it. I think this country's getting away from metal too much. I think they've forgotten about metal. They don't know the importance of metal to your cardio, your heart, your lungs, your hips. They forget. You know, when I told Lee the first week I did deadlifts, I would have to go home and take a nap, even though I got eight the night before. And it wasn't the weed, because I smoke weed every fucking day. I know when I go home and put my feet up and go, wow, my fucking insides are tingling. That was what I got from deadlifting. But before all that started, I didn't touch a weight till I got into jiu-jitsu, and I saw how bad of shape I was in. And every conditioning thing that I talked about and read online, they always had a small paragraph about kettlebells. They spoke about body weight exercises, which I'm too weak to pull 350 pounds, 340, 330 at the time.
Yeah.
When I first walked into jiu-jitsu, I was 336. Fucking doctor had me on testosterone. Meanwhile, I was making too many blood cells. I was a fucking walk in the park from having a heart attack. My cardio was garbage. Every time I'd breathe heavy, my body would stress, and I'd see stars, and I'd have to take my top gi off and go outside and breathe oxygen. Lee, you have no idea how better a shape you were when I walked into fucking jiu-jitsu. It was scary, but everything pointed at kettlebells. Again, I'm the type of guy, you know what? You could learn a lot on YouTube. You could learn a lot watching and reading. I'll go pay somebody.
Don't do what I did, even though I'm proud of being self-taught. I could have probably, it took me 2 years what I could have paid somebody to teach me in a few months. But, you know, training is not cheap. If you're lucky, you can find a place that has a class. But this kettlebell training is almost always private training. This it's called heart style kettlebell training. But first of all, congratulations on that, like, gigantic weight loss. Don't forget that. I mean, somebody's got to tell you how incredible that is. Most people don't pull that off. And that's amazing.
And so, you go to sleep for a while. You know, you rest on what you've done. But then you go, you get on the scale and you put on 50 pounds. Because I got all the way down to 270, 276. Yeah. Was when I shot that dog movie in Colorado. And it was a lot of work. Because we're stoners. We like to throw a pot cookie in here and there. We like to, when you're a stoner, it changes the game. I don't have my jersey. And I get mad at Lee for this. I always yell at Lee for, he's from Boston. You're from, in my world, where I'm from, you're from one of the best food markets
there is
in the world, and one of the best food markets in the country. It's so tough to compete with that type of food. For me, there's nothing better for my world and your world than a diner. I'm from New Jersey, okay? I trust a diner. A diner has never done me wrong. Those Greeks are the best kitchen motherfuckers in the world.
Why are they always Greek?
I don't know. To ask him.
I don't know. Marlboro Diner. We all had it. We all had the whatever. I don't even know what ethnicity they were, but we all had diners. We all went to them.
I grew up in a fucking diner. I grew up on two things that they've taken away from me here. And because everything is forgotten here. The slice. Because
there's no fresh slices here.
Nobody understands the power of the slice of pizza. It keeps you alive for 4 hours.
Yeah.
From two to dinner. Two, when you can't take life no more. When you know what? I'm going to get a fucking slice with a fucking Diet Coke and some red pepper crushes, and I'm going to eat my slice like a gentleman. Okay, and you that slice saves your life. That slice has what? How many calories does that slice have?
300 for cheese.
Just cheese, and we could all live on cheese. You don't have to be a Gavone and put, can I get the Thai chicken with pineapple and throw some pepperoni on there and some roasted artichoke
hearts? Pepperoni's good.
But you don't need it. This is what I'm talking about. True. What you could live with and what you don't. So we have that, and you have the Greek restaurant. Two eggs, wheat toast, home fries, coffee, and water, $4.99. And you know the lady, so you duke her $1.50, whatever's left over, and everybody fucking makes out. She has 20 of those people that leave her $1 every fucking hour. She's making $20 an hour, that fucking chick, on those $1.50s.
Probably, yeah.
So I grew up on that. Once you limit, there's nothing better than walking into a diner and you know their food schedule. When you know a diner's food schedule, you're pretty much a loser. The Berkshire Diner, even though I always found the hair in that motherfucker. It was on Bergenline Avenue. There was always something, a fingernail.
That's gross.
But that fingernail added flavor like a motherfucker. Okay, that food with the open steak sandwich on white bread toasted with a little butter and some steak fries. Come on,
no
dog.
No fingernails in Jersey sandwiches.
Come on, dog, stop it. We all know there's something in there. What do you think, Brad Pitt wrote that fucking story? Everybody pisses in the food in Jersey. I don't know.
Things were cheaper back then, that's for sure.
I'm just making this shit up. But you think of that. I knew that on Wednesday nights I'd go out and get super hammered, and I'd go to that Berkshire and get the cream of turkey soup with the fucking open steak sandwich. You can't find that in Los Angeles. Thin steak, chopped thin over a fucking white bread with butter on it, and the gravy from the steak and the onions is dripping on your motherfucking steak fries, Lee. How you gonna act? How you gonna act at 2 in the morning? While you're eating that, when the waitress comes over, she goes, can I get you boys anything else? You go, yeah, let me get 4 milkshakes all around. What do you want? Chocolate? I want vanilla. What do you want? I want a strawberry one. Shut the fuck up. And she comes back. You take that fucking steak sandwich. You eat that fucking milkshake on top of it. How do you sleep? How do you sleep, Steve? Like you did heroin and you got 19 blowjobs. Oh. They suck the blood out of your fucking dick.
It's amazing.
It's amazing how you sleep.
But you can't not eat ever again. Like, that's your point. Like, you got mad at me for going to Korean because the Chinese were here first.
The Chinese were here first.
They got first dibs.
The Chinese were here first.
He said to me on the phone.
The Chinese were here first.
The Chinese
guy. Yeah, no, but it pisses me. He goes downtown. It's 2 hours.
It's Koreatown. It takes 30 minutes.
No, it doesn't. It never takes 30 minutes.
Well, I don't go at Friday night at dinner.
You fucking, yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Not to Koreatown.
Yes, you do. Yes, you fucking do. Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday.
Anytime you ever drive on that fucking Vermont and drive, take your fucking time down that street, go ahead. Go to Vermont, and I dare you to pass, like, West 3rd Street. It's bumper to bumper, and Koreans just stop the car. I think they take the red light out of the back of the fucking car. You don't even know where the fuck they're stopping. They think they're driving a fucking rickshaw, whatever the fuck you call that
rickshaw.
Shit. They just pull over. You're stuck in behind 10. Then when he pulls out, you got another one in front of him.
Yeah,
I've never successfully driven in fucking Koreatown without almost having a heart attack. I cut around. Even, what's my favorite place in L.A.? Langer's. You ever try getting the Langer's? You ever eat at Langer's, though?
No, I try to cook as many of my own meals as I can.
No. Have you ever eaten as a real fucking Jew?
I don't think so.
Oh, my God.
Is it? Where is it?
It's only open till 4 because it's such a bad neighborhood. They can't stay open after 4, okay? It's right across from that crazy park where you get the passports and IDs, right?
Yeah.
I'm not lying.
MacArthur Park.
If you walk in that park, tell people ask you if you want to buy a passport. It's the real fucking deal. Wow. It's Alvarado. Down on Alvarado, Langer's. Oh, my God. But you got to go at 11:15, and that's it. They got the crusty rye bread with the pastrami. You can't lose, dog.
Man, you guys know all the spots.
But my argument is, yeah, okay, that steak
your
sandwich sounds amazing.
Your fucking argument is you eat pizza from fucking shit, and you're from Boston. You're disrespected.
What, are you never going to have pizza again because you live
out
here?
No, you look for the best pizza.
Yeah, I do look for the best. Danielle's is good.
No,
I don't care what you say. Danielle's is good.
Danielle's is good. We got 600 calories.
Yeah, you know how many calories are in it, which is big.
So why was it that I didn't know what to do, and I went online, and I bought a 10-pound kettlebell from...
That's a paperweight. You just have no need for less.
No. It was a nightmare.
People don't know this. Yeah,
I still have it in my trunk of my car. I gave it to my friend's wife.
That's good.
And now I'm going to take it back to do the Turkish get-ups when I'm on my
own. It's a good thing for a couple tools, but you know, in almost any time you move a kettlebell, you're using your whole body to move it. So something like that, as small is just too light. So you start with at least a 20 or 8 kilo, 18-pound bell or a 26-pounder. You're swinging the 35-pound bell. easily in class. I really want to get you onto a real kettlebell would be a 24 kilo. There's no reason why we can't build you up to swinging
what's
that.
24 kilo?
53 pounds.
Jesus.
You'll do it easily, you know, with just like what you couldn't do in jiu-jitsu on day one, you could do 6 months later. You just got to try to practice it two or three times a week for a little bit, not even a lot. And, you know, looking at the way you're moving, swings and squats should be your life. You still have a very good squat. And, yep.
You don't want me to do the cleans?
You could do as many of those as you want. Those are fun. I just wouldn't go heavy with those because if we can make your clean really good, then the next step is to teach you swing really good. Then the next step is to teach you how to clean it. You see the way I clean it with in front of me and then get it to the, this is called the rack position, hold it with control. I teach it to you that way. But you can do the cleans for fun or for warm up if you like them and do them. But you know, just getting as many swings as we can into you.
And the swings, you know, anytime you talk about kettlebells, swings is the first thing they bring up. Why is that?
The swing is basically the center of the kettlebell universe. I'm stealing that from Riff, of course. Only people who are like obsessed with kettlebells know this guy, so I give him credit. Basically, the movement in that, the hip movement in that, you do the same hip movement in all the other exercises: the clean, the press, the snatch, high pull. All the basic exercises are based on that swing, but getting a person to move their hips properly, it's kind of a long skill set. It takes at least a few months for a person's body to understand it. And once they do that, once they can swing well, then they can learn all the other exercises, and it opens up like an unlimited branch of exercises and combinations that you can train with. And I only do like 6 or 7 of the kettlebell movements, you know, the real basic ones. So, that's why the swing is important. Plus, everything athletic is done with our hips, right? It's done with our glutes, our hamstrings, our hips. You know, in America, when we're showing strength, we go like this, go boom, show them the biceps and the chest. But, you know, Russians, they look at you from the back, stealing this from Pavel, of course, just giving credit to the people who brought this here. And, they look at you from the back, you know, big back, big ass. That's what a strong person looks like. This is just for show. So the swing is really about building the back of your body. So if you're having trouble overhead pressing, that's not important. I wouldn't do that. I would just, as much weight you can pull from the ground swinging or deadlifting, that's not your arms and shoulders, that's your lats, that's your glutes, your hamstrings, your hips, and that's your ability to sit up and stand down, you know, extended. It's just like practicing sitting up and standing down under load.
Now, the method that you teach is, what's his name?
Pavel. He teaches a hard style, Pavel Tsatsouin, the easiest name to mispronounce. And it's a pretty modern system. It came here in the 90s. Basically, it's a blend of martial arts, Goju-Ryu, which is the first style of martial arts that I trained, which is just means hard and soft. So this system is based on the concept of tension and relaxation. And everything athletic is this blend, this combination of tension and relaxation. So martial arts is in the punching. You're loose when you make contact. Boom, you tense everything at the same time. Then you relax again. So the swing is the same thing. You're tense as you lock yourself out. And all the exercises are based on that principle. And then some other Russian weightlifting principles, basically, on how to make these really easy progressions, like how to take you from a 16-kilo swing for 10 reps for 15 minutes on the minute to a 20 and then a 24. Just over time, just a real basic
system.
What's
20, 24?
A 20 is a 44-pound bell. You got to get used to this. For some reason, we're just still stuck on kilos with these things. Like, you adapt to it. But 20 is 44 pounds. 24 is 53. But you could swing even bigger than this with training, for sure. You know, but
That's like when I started over at the other place, which was a great place. They would always start with deadlifts.
You sure.
Know? And then we'd go to 10 sets of swings. In 10 minutes, oh my God, I used to have to run out of the gym and breathe. I'd have to fucking pee right away. And I think it's still my breathing. My breathing, something's not right.
Here's the deal. I wouldn't want you to really train that hard because you're still just in the early stages of really figuring out how to do this movement. So I'd rather you train less off the clock. That stuff that we do in class where we're trying to push in the pace, I would do less reps and rest longer because I don't want you to get fatigued while you're getting used to the movement. Now, that being said, I'll look at your breathing for you and everything, but you just put a lot of effort into it. You do it like a punch already. I hear you fucking breathing. There's nobody else making noise in the class. These guys are all new to it. And I can hear you on your swings. So, you know, that's also just from your karate training from a million years ago, right? It just is there.
You know, want me to be honest with you? This whole breathing thing came about after jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
I realized I've been holding my breath for years.
People breathe in their chest as they get older and stress develops. So you just got to, you know, learn to, like, relax your belly. There's a whole, you know... You're probably just a chest breather for many years. You don't realize it, and you're just tense.
I got the sleep apnea. As soon as I have to warm up real lightly with things. If not, that's when I see stars. Like, your class last Tuesday blew my mind because I broke a personal goal. I didn't cheat at all. I did 10. A couple of them I did 12.
And I seen the video, man. I believe it.
It was
you got video really, of all of it.
It was really for me. Yeah. I could get to 7, and then I have to rest a minute and a half, a minute three quarters.
That's good, man. Well,
this was, and I paid for it the next day. You know that was, but then Saturday I came back and I did 5 sets of swings. I did 5 sets of cleans. And I got a 10-pound dumbbell that I had, and I did the Turkish get-ups to the move.
That's good.
I practiced. I did sit-ups. I did.
Is that the thing where you're on your back and you move to? Oh, that was scary.
That's tremendous.
When you
are you going to be there tomorrow?
I'll be there. But when you started doing it, I thought you were going to have me do it with the kettlebell in my hand, and I was like, I'm going to drop this on my face.
You have kettlebells right now. We'll do them right now. My boy will be fucked up.
I'm fucked up.
I wouldn't do that to you,
buddy.
We'll
sweat that star of death right out of
you. I mean,
we'll film it tomorrow.
Do you recommend? Going on YouTube, because after your class, I went on YouTube, because it's not that I hate working out. I don't know anything, so I'm terrified. So I get negative about it. But I had a great time at your class. So I went on YouTube, and I watched, 4 videos, and each one of them had a different way. And just for me, as a chubby guy who's not into working out, that would totally turn me off if I was, at home trying to do it. But being at your class, it was super fun. So, there must be other kettlebell classes in other parts, because the I don't know how you taught yourself. The YouTube for me really was scary almost.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it, because if you don't enjoy it, you won't continue doing it. You have to just somehow pick it up. Obviously, you put it in your hand and you love it, Joey. So, I mean, that's a huge step. So you just got to do it regularly, and just remember that it's all just skill first. At your guys' level, until you get very strong, it's mostly skill, and the better you can get at the skill, the more weight you'll move naturally. If you just reached a PR this last class, if you come in tomorrow, back off and work more on technique, because you just peaked. You're going to peak again this week. That's not the way the body would work, right? So this is all just kind of basic, you can call it Russian weightlifting programming. So just based on what you're telling me.
Very surprised when I left there. I was euphoric when I left there. I had to go to a meeting. I ran home, took a shower. My dick was hard during the shower.
Excellent. Good.
I had a protein shake, and I ran the fuck out of there. And I was great at the meeting. It went smooth, you know. Let me talk to you about something. Excuse me, because I've been getting allergies lately. What is it about working out that you don't like? Is it about going to the gym as a heavy guy?
No, I was never really self-conscious. For me as a person, I was never good at sports, just at anything. So I got competitive in other things. And I don't like it. Paula has asked me to go bowling 17 times. I refuse to go bowling. I hate bowling because I'm the worst bowler. And I don't know. Even the past few jiu-jitsus, I have anxiety. Not even anxiety. It's just I don't want to. It's almost dread. I don't want to go there. I'm terrible. Why don't I just go on the elliptical that I know? And I was nervous before kettlebells, but more so just because I haven't lifted weights really since high school. Well, and I wasn't even doing it that heavy then. And yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of like a sore loser. If I'm bad at something, I don't like it. It's like something weird in me.
Well, hey, for what it's worth, you're at least average plus. Given there were 10 guys there, you're at least average or better. So you're doing good. It's only your first lesson.
And it's weird. I don't have to be. It's not like I'm comparing myself. I want to be first place, because I'm not going to be, especially there. But you're not an idiot. You know when you're bad at something or when you're good at something. So it's just and what I should do is focus on that more and try to get good at it. But I get really, that sucks.
Just do your best. Everybody sucks at this point. That's the thing, is everybody's a beginner. Nobody has just learned something in 1 or 2 or 3 or 10 lessons of training. So as long as you do it regularly, I like the idea that you're enjoying it. That's all that matters.
Oh, I really like it. I almost went crazy. I had never, I would, not at the class, but at home that night, I'm I like watching TV and I'll be on my computer working or something. I'm a sedentary person. I was walking around my apartment. I had to get an edible and go to the comedy store to calm down.
Oh, that's good. Come to my place and I'll give you a couple free sessions to get your momentum going, because got to do it more than once a week, and I don't want you to do it without a little supervision.
I got fucking sore. Yeah, I haven't gotten sore from working out at jiu-jitsu or on the elliptical. I feel fine. And the first day I felt fine after your class, but then the second half of the day, I was just walking. I was like, oh shit, this hurts a lot. But it was like it was cool. Like I felt like I knew I had worked.
Was it the front of your legs or the back of your legs?
The side and the back.
The side and the back is good. Ultimately, we really want you. If your hamstrings are sore, the back of your legs, then we know we're really doing it right.
Okay.
But hey, it's good that you're sore. That means you moved something that needed to be moved.
Yeah, it was fun.
As long as you're not hurt.
I understand that exercise isn't for everybody. And there was a time in my life when it wasn't there for me. I didn't think about it. I had that old mentality that I'd never get fat. And meanwhile, I'm putting on 10 pounds a year, and the muscle I built lifting was deteriorating. I still had the shoulders, but, you know, and that's how we all think until you get a, you go somewhere and you look at a mirror unlike that's yours. Sometimes you look different in a mirror in Las Vegas. You go to Las Vegas hungry, you go to the bathroom, you walk by a mirror, you go, oh, fuck. Because I think your mirror at home keeps you a certain way. It's when you go to a different mirror that you go, Jesus Christ, I got to lose some fucking weight.
For me, it's pictures. Like, looking in the mirror now, I still think, oh, I look relatively the same. But then I have a picture on here from Ookie Spooky when we went to Austin. And I look at it, and I'll get it for you when you guys are talking. But it's, for me, even I hated it. I didn't work out from junior year of high school until this year, until a year ago. If you can take the iPad and watch a movie and get on the elliptical, it doesn't even, because like that's what why I get mad at myself. If I'm going to go home and watch TV, I might as well be on the elliptical. It's really not that bad.
You don't need any cardio, though. That's the thing is, for your primary goal is to get leaner, and that cardio, you can't think of training as calories. How many calories am I eating? How many calories are I burning? It's good to know your general calories, but my advice is to count calories for 2 weeks and you fucking know what to eat. Because if you're serious, you just should be really eating the same repetitious foods over and over, a certain amount of foods that you know fit your program, and it's not a grind. And if you're not doing that, then you're not serious yet. So, you know,
not it's tough, man. These fucking stars.
This I'm is fucked the up, man. Test. I feel it.
When you go home tonight, you'll be hungry. You'll be hungry.
I know. I'm going to pick out.
And
I
you
cheat.
Have to, and you have to, you know, and that's the thing that kills me. But I also eat it controlled. And that's what I was getting to the point with Lee, where once I left the East Coast, I knew I couldn't go to a Greek diner no more. Why am I mind-fucking myself?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you can never have a steak sandwich again.
Go every once in a while.
Find one. Find one at 11 o'clock.
The food sucks here.
Where?
The food in LA in general.
Especially
is
late night.
Find the 11 o'clock fucking open steak sandwich.
What about?
I'll give you $500. Nobody's got it.
Really? No one has it? Jerry's doesn't even really sell
10 o'clock. I'll get you one over at Ruth Chris. They have the happy hour. They have a steak sandwich. I never had it, but I know it's available just in case I get a sudden urge. I want to watch a game with you or whatever the fuck. I want to talk some shit.
There's nothing, and I'm sure it's the same out here, but at least I grew up in Boston.
Jerry's is $92 and everything's bad.
Not even Jerry's.
Everything's not bad at Jerry's. It's just one of those places that when the check comes, you go, why are we spending $70? I had a soup, you had a soup, I had a sandwich, you had a sandwich. Why is it $70?
Yeah.
Because I'm at Jerry's. I don't give a fuck. The best pastrami I've had is from fucking, you know, the least place, you know, Alvarado. The place looks like a bomb in it. The chairs are still there since 1920. But the recipe's been in the fucking family since God knows when. So.
Right. But there's nothing, at least I still remember, I'm not even a huge drinker, but like 2 a.m., those half-drunk meals are just amazing.
Eat dog shit. That's why Taco Bell is good.
Yeah.
Right or wrong, you eat Taco Bell?
Yeah, I eat everything.
No, you don't.
I swear I do, but I try to, like, at my best, it's 90%, 10%.
What's your breakfast? Give me your daily diet.
I get up really early. I get up at 5 a.m. no matter, almost. The truth is if it's 9:30 now.
Right, you're tired.
It's bedtime.
Yeah.
I saved up energy for this. I relaxed all day, and I got juice for you. But you know, I wake up and I usually just don't eat anything from 5 to about 11 because I intermittent fast. It's really simple. I tried at my best only eat between about 11 a.m. and 7 p.m.
I just heard about that 8 hours.
It's good for
eat
men.
All your meals.
It's good for men. It improves your. I think it improves your hormonal profile, so you just naturally release more testosterone and growth hormone when you're not eating. You want to talk about like detoxing or purifying? Anytime there's no food in your stomach. And you're moving around, you are totally just detoxing. You're pumping your body, you're pumping everything through, basically. That's true detox. But if you're busy digesting food, you know, that's where the energy goes. However you want to look at it, it's not like no mystical energy, but your body's energy. So, I like intermittent fasting, but the trick is I'm not trying to really lose any weight. So I eat three big freaking meals. I don't believe in snacking. I think snacking is a little for girls. I don't specialize in men, but I know what I believe in for me, and that men evolved hunting, so that if you were like out on a long trip, you could go days without food and not be a pussy about it. I can say that here, right? So that, I think, is the man.
Have like, you tried Cheez-Its and Oreos?
I eat everything, bro. I was hooked on it. I'm telling you, I could have been type 2 diabetes if I would have gone a couple more years.
Oh, me too.
Even without even being very heavy, although I was fat fuck, I think. But
yeah. 180's not fat.
Yeah, I know. I'm lucky. I was 190 at my peak. But in the picture, I have a couple fat pictures. The truth for me is, like, the pictures on the internet, I look better in pictures than I – it actually reversed my dysmorphia, made me feel better about my body. But I just got myself really lean. Because I just try to eat right.
And so what's your 11 o'clock meal?
Oh, so protein and fat. You know, I'm a big believer.
Which is what?
Eggs and bacon and ham and sausage and, you know, I buy almost all my food at like farmers markets.
No potatoes for breakfast.
Not yet. I do no eat carbs. Potatoes. I try not to because I think that if you start the day on proteins and fats, you just basically, you'll be satiated. Man, if you have a big plate, I'll eat like 6 eggs. I'll eat 3 of them raw and 3 of them cooked. So that's another thing. I eat them raw, too.
That was crazy. He did that after class.
You saw one, right? Yeah. It's very healthy for you. You should always only eat organic eggs if you can eat raw eggs. You know, USDA organic or from a farmer's market. But it's a good way. It's like better than a protein shake, a real protein shake. And it's got unbelievable vitamins and minerals in the yolk. And it's alive, so it's got enzymes in it. That's the hidden secret with food and losing weight, I think, is like what's going on in your gut. If you have any healthy bacteria, if you're eating all overcooked foods or dead foods, even rice and potatoes are kind of like dead, you don't have this healthy bacteria. Some fermented foods are good. You know, you got to like sauerkraut. Do you like sauerkraut? If you can get like there's local fermented sauerkraut right in the neighborhood, I'll bring you one next time. But you can eat
without
that.
A hot dog, no.
Fuck yeah, I mean,
no
you know, I don't want you, if you want to eat a hot dog at one point, eat a hot dog, just not all day.
It's a joke. It's
no,
a
I
joke.
Eat it on a hot dog, I'll do it.
I love sauerkraut.
Hebrew
it's
National.
Gotta be something around there.
Gotta be a Hebrew Nash.
Those fucking Polish dogs.
Joe, look, this was me when we went to Austin.
Oh, no, the fat, the skinny
that.
Picture.
You showed me that.
Let's see, you gained weight or lost weight?
He lost 100 pounds.
Oh, I didn't know that about you, buddy. I'm sorry, I didn't look enough into your history.
No, that's okay. That was me a year ago.
Okay, you were really heavy.
Oh, I was 315.
Well, congratulations again. You guys are like... Honestly, it's like the odds are better of winning the lottery than losing 100 fucking pounds and keeping it off for more than 2 seconds. I actually have a client that kept it off for 8 years now, but she's an ultra marathoner now. You know what that is? That's more than a marathon she runs. Unbelievable athlete. But that's what it takes, like a commitment, you know, like a commitment to like not being heavy. But yeah, you guys are doing. You guys are doing jiu-jitsu and weightlifting. Maybe a little yoga we can get in there, and you know.
I started this whole thing with yoga. My wife, I think I really when I knocked my wife up, it was a mixture of weights, yoga, and protein powder.
You probably have like the genetics though, of like a fucking from your stories that you tell. You got unbelievable genes. It's just been proven at this point.
Why is that?
Because you're walking around and training hard, and you know everything's fine. So.
Nah, I think there's something going on with my heart. I could feel it sometimes, from time to time.
What do you mean?
But I think always got to go see a doctor with that shit.
Oh, I go all the time.
Okay,
I know.
Oh,
no, I go all. I got good insurance.
Yeah, you should go as much as you can.
Yeah, no. I'm off for the physical on the 18th. The finger in the ass, the blood drawn. I think I'm going to go draw blood this week. You know, I drink water now again. It's because of my daughter. It's because of a lot of things. I know what it's like to wake up in the morning and drink a soda and light up a fucking cigarette and smoke 2 cigarettes back to back and then smoke a fucking joint the size of this finger that was already rolled waiting for me because, God forbid, I had to roll the joint in the morning. You know what I'm saying? I know what it's like. I know how it feels to have your blood pressure shoot the fuck up. Like, you put your thing on your arm and you're 180 over 120 at 8:01 in the morning. I know that feeling, and I don't like that feeling, and I know the difference now. You know, I breathe a little bit before I smoke dope. I breathe a little bit in the morning now. 30 minutes, I drink some coffee, I relax. Then I hit a fucking little pipe full just to get the blood going. You know what I'm saying? Just to make sure the spirit's in the house.
Yeah.
I go do a little writing. I fuck around a little bit. I go on the computer. I get my day sorted out, my little wardrobe. I fucking mama makes some breakfast.
Living in California, we're blessed, we're lucky because we have access to good medicinal herb. And that's just medicine and You know, I'm a California patient, and I know you are too. Yeah, I'd imagine you are, but if not, whatever. We'll say you are.
If you're starting kettlebells, how many sets would you do? What is like a starting point for somebody like Lee? After the next 3 weeks with Lee, what will you have Lee doing?
I'll have a goal. I'll have a goal for everybody at VMAC, by the way, at John Budd School. I'll have a goal for all you guys. I'm going to bring a real – the thing you guys haven't seen real kettlebells yet, truthfully.
Those aren't
kettlebells? The goal for a man of your guys' size, of our size basically, is to take a 32-kilogram kettlebell and do that. This is my goal that I set for you, and it's simple, but you'll see how it'll take a lot of work to get there. And while you're learning the skill, you'll be building strength. And so instead of you thinking it as just a torturous hard workout, you feel yourself getting better, and you'll almost accidentally get stronger till one day a 32-kilogram bell will be something you can manage. And for some of the guys, maybe a 24-kilogram get-up, which is easily doable for guys, of certain, unless you're below 140.
A get-up?
Brother, I can do 106-pound get-up, so, I'm not that big.
Oh, well, that's all based on form. That get-up is a lot of technique.
Past a certain weight, it's about learning how to use your body. It's actually, some people have called it a loaded yoga. That's probably why I was good at it, because I had a lot of yoga behind me, and then I started to pick up kettlebells, and the get-up was like my specialty, because it was the only exercise that's kind of like a little guy that I could be really strong at and do something that most guys cannot do. So, heavy get-up, turn you into a monster, turn your body into like a frame, a steel frame. But really? A heavy swing, too. Heavy swing is real important, too, because the get-up is, like a slow-moving exercise. It's a grind, kind of. It's a, I like the explosiveness of the swing exercises, too.
Can kettlebells help with loose skin? Because I know a lot of people who lose weight have that issue.
As loose skin, probably as a part of an overall health plan, which will include losing weight, I would imagine. But
It's because we lose weight.
I understand that. Probably the answer for that is not great. You probably got to get that worked on, because I don't think that shit goes away. Well, I think that you're...
I've heard if you lift, it helps. I really don't want to have surgery just because
It can never hurt to be as muscular. The thing is, to be as muscular as possible. You're never going to be too big unless you're on something and you're just a natural athlete. Being more muscular is just beneficial for your health. It makes you resistant to injury, and it burns energy. I still eat like 4,000 calories a day at 180 pounds. Yeah, because I'm all muscle.
Lucky.
I'm not a huge, but I burn, But I put in a lot of energy training other people.
So you eat 4,000 calories in 8 hours?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
I cheat. But sometimes, I'm not perfect. I never lie about my diet, but I do cheat,
You have to. You can't live your whole life.
My theory is if you were raised on American foods here up from like 0 to 6, like that age frame, that was all, we ate that shit. It's impossible not to look at it as something like, I love that. Twinkies. Like, what the fuck? Like, that shit is such garbage, but I still eat it.
Whatever my wife buys in the house, eventually the weed makes me get up.
Yeah.
My wife is very smart. She buys the cups to the baby with the little cookies. Now, anybody who's old school knows those cookies taste like ass. Oreos still maintain. They made a big payoff. Still something in Oreos. They kept the coconut fucking fat in there.
They're getting a little weird with all the new flavors, though.
Yeah. No, but that's for fucking this youth that wants to try. Listen, I grew up on... The only thing I get beside Oreo is the double stack.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. And no flavors. I ain't going to lie to you. About 10 years ago, I bought the tin that comes in Christmas. That comes dipped in white chocolate with chocolate.
Really?
That comes in the tin over the fucking holidays.
No way. I've never seen
those. Hey, man, listen. Listen, guys. From 2000 to 2005 or 6, you could ask my wife. At night, my 8 o'clock high... You know what the snack was? After dinner and McDonald's for breakfast and breakfast at home and Chinese food and who's ever house I stopped by who offered me a sandwich. Yep. But my late night snack, my all-time favorite, is a little bit bigger than the 32-ounce Coke. Yeah, 32-ounce.
Wow.
Not the 64.
Wow.
And a whole pint of Ben & Jerry's New York Super Fudge Chunk.
With the soda? I like the ice cream, but all that soda too?
Dog, I cut the thing in half. One scoop. Put it in a glass.
Oh, man.
Put the Coke in there.
Oh, my God.
And then I'd mix it up so the peanuts and the chocolate would go to the bottom. And I'd mix it up real good.
I can see your mouth is watering right now.
Oh, my God. You have no idea.
You're not doing that anymore, right?
Never again.
That's diabetes, bro.
And I drink like half of it. And then I throw the whole container in. And I put the whole thing in. Stir it. Drink a little bit. Stir it. Drink a little bit. Stir it. Drink a little bit. And then I'd eat every piece of fucking chocolate in the bottom. That was my thing. Honestly, right now on this podcast, I was doing that 3 to 4 nights a week. So we all have fucking flaws. I'm very happy I do not have diabetes. That's the first thing they test me for.
That's fantastic.
One time I ate a pot cookie that was in my trunk. I did a blood test.
No, you can't.
Oh, my God. They called me within the hour. They're like, you got to come back. You got diabetes. You got melanoma. You got fucking more shit than fucking...
A little serious. 1 second. Why don't you just check it yourself and get a glucometer? It's one of the only tools you can buy on the shelves.
Stick yourself.
Fuck yeah. You know what? It's not what you, it's not. It's nothing. It is nothing. You'll not. You barely
Listen,
feel
I
it.
Almost fainted during the UFC the other night. Let me give some shout outs and we'll talk about this.
Yes, sir.
Eddie Bravo invited me to some fucking people's houses. They were from Carlstadt, New Jersey. You should see this house, guys. This is the best house I've been to. In a shitty neighborhood, you walk in. He has a Led Zeppelin mural on his wall and a pinball machine, an old Guns N' Roses. Then you go upstairs, there was a bar, there was pizzas everywhere, there was catered food. The fucking wall was gigantic. Everybody was smoking dope. I went out to the balcony. I knew nobody. But the one guy was at the Comedy Store the one night when I destroyed the English lady. So he came over to me. They offered me pizza. I'm watching the fight amongst people that I don't know. And all of a sudden, there's a UFC fight, and he's dripping the blood on his chest, and the blood's going everywhere. And, brother, I had to look down.
You got dizzy?
Right, because the last thing you want to do is faint in front of fucking strangers. that alone right there had me sweating bullets. I'm going to give some shout-outs to my man Joe Swanson, Anthony Berardi, Kickback Attack, Rob Gebhardt, Brian Burton, Eric Harrison, Harry Solovich, or whatever you... Solakian. Harry Solakian and Scott Phillips, you bad motherfucker. Yeah, that thing pricking yourself at the house, that don't work for
you. Oh, man. All right. I'll keep trying to get you
My
to do it.
My fucking cat, Dimmy. One of the craziest cats I have. The only cat that... I love this motherfucker. He and Reefa were born on the same day. When I used to come home fucking and I first gave up coke, the only thing that stopped me from jumping out the window was Dimmy. Because Dimmy was a kitten and I'd get really high and I'd take a piece of paper from the notebook, rip it, and I'd play Olé with him. He could play Olé when he was 6 months old. You don't know what life is till you play Olé with your fucking cat. And I would go like this and he'd sit there and he'd go through the fucking paper and then he'd turn right around and look for it. Well, Dimmy has a fat ball on the side of his thing. So took him to the vet like 3 months ago. The vet said it was no cancer. It was just a fat ball. That if it got bigger, they got to take it out. Well, about a week ago, he started limping. So, but he's been acting weird. Like he jumps on my lap and he wants to be loved. Dimmy's always been a lover. You know, that's what makes you love Dimmy, that he's a scumbag. You know, the other night I get up, I hear shit in the living room. I'm in the bathroom taking a pee. This is just 3 weeks ago. This is the kind of scumbag he is. I get home. I'm fucking a little high. I'm pissing. You know what I mean? You got to run in the house and pee. And I fucking hear something. And I hear like something falling. He's on the thing pushing the pictures off the mantle. Like a fucking. And I look at him.
Like a comedy.
And this is why I love him. Because I look at him and I go, Dimmy. And he just looks at me like, what? Like what? I'm just fucking around. I go, Dimmy, get the fuck down from there. I go in the bathroom to wash my hands. I hear another fucking picture go down. Now I got to chase him and fucking hit him with a shoe or call him a scumbag. He hides under the VCR and sits under there for an hour and his tail gets all big. It's just hilarious. You want to kill that motherfucker. But on the other hand, you'll be sitting there kind of confused. You've had a fucked up day. You're sore. You went to see Yogi Steve and he fucking killed you. And all of a sudden he jumps on you. And he lays this way on your legs, and as he goes to sit down, he pops his. You've seen him do knuckle sandwich.
That's my favorite. I was just going to say that.
Knuckles, this motherfucker,
he'll sit there.
Come here, dog, give me knuckle sandwich. You put your hand down, and he'll come up to you and hit your head with it. He's a cool motherfucker, Yogi Steve.
And he'll do it.
He's
a reefer. Every time. It's not like
he's money. He's money. This guy is a solid dude. He's just a fuck. If there's something going on, it's fucking Demi. If there's something going, if the sink is on, or there's a piece of bacon on the floor, that's Dimmy. He ripped it out of the refrigerator. We locked him in the, when he was a kitten, he locked him in the refrigerator. My wife opened up the refrigerator. He was sitting there, meow. Wow. He was in the fucking, that's how crazy he is anyway.
I love him.
I didn't say nothing because I was upset the last 2 days. My little Dimmy, so we took him to the vet today. They gave him pain pills. I'm going to go home and eat three of them. And see, because I asked my wife, what are they? She took a bag out this big of pain pills. I might as well go home and snort them.
I don't believe you.
No, no, I'm just teasing you guys. But I took my dogs in 1987. I did take Hercules's.
I believe it. Sleep whatever pills. It is.
So wait, are they going to do surgery?
No, they want to. They took X-rays or something. They're going to call us tomorrow and decide what they're going to do with Denny. My wife was heartbroken. That's her cat. Old school. Like, that's the man of her life.
Yeah. Demi, and especially when Harry and him are together, like when I come over sometimes and you're like, play with my cats, I'll be patting like Harry and Demi will shoot over and like knock my hand away and then Harry will fight for it. Those are probably my favorite.
They're fucking good people, so it would break the house in half. Yogi Steve, you have a lot going on.
Yes, sir.
You know, yeah. John Budd spoke about you highly as fuck. You know, he always said we had to get together because I brought the kettlebell to VMAC a couple times. I'm like, John, let's do these, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You're a jiu-jitsu guy. You know, you say this because it helped me completely. It really did. It made a huge jump. And I was out there last summer, dog, before my knee surgery, last August 24th. I knew the knee was going. Well, what's the difference? So I would go out there at night at 11 o'clock at night in July and just do. And I would see stars, but I'd hang in there. And I would do between, in those days, I'd do 7 sets of swings, 3 or 4 sets of cleans. I'd do the regular squats, how you teach.
Sure.
I'd do goblet 5 squats. Of those, and they fucking kill you. They kill you. That's what killed me last week.
It's a real important movement, though. Do that, and you'll stay young. You know, if you can squat, that's just a huge movement pattern. You don't ever want to have to be helped up out of your chair, right? You don't want to be able to get up yourself, so if you can do it holding a weight, you'll be able to do it longer just throughout your regular squat. It's important to help with your posture.
I'm happy that there's more guys like you out there that you're not Jack O'Lane. You're doing it to really help people. The reason why you're on this show is because I could tell when you come up on Tuesdays that you really like helping people, and that's big in my world.
I was shocked. I mean, I'm absolutely flattered you to have me on here, and I really appreciate it, and
I like what you do on Tuesday mornings, and I know that you're not getting rich over there, but like I said, I like your belief in what you... I'm telling you, this is a man-to-man. Yeah. I like that you're from Jersey and that you're Jewish. Those are 2 pluses.
There you go.
Any Jew is a fucking always deep friend of mine. Lee, am I lying?
Yeah.
Who's the spokesman for the Jews? By 2019, who's going to lead the Jews into the next fucking underworld? Tell them, Lee.
Probably you.
Me. With a yarmulke, then we're going to be throwing money at me because I'm the only one that's going to speak for them. Watch the right way. I'm going to lead them back to Israel to take back what belongs to them.
Cubans and the Jews are going to go together.
They're going to go together. You think
that's
I'm fucking kidding?
Pretty much what Miami has got going on.
So. They got it going on. But, you know, I went on your page and you have some interesting stuff on your page.
King of the Jews.
Your Facebook page, and you have like a saying up there, and I see that you're involved in Laurel Canyon. You know, I was never really not Laurel Canyon, Runyon Canyon. When I moved here in 97, I dated a fucking whore.
Okay?
She was a
Hollywood
fucking pig. Okay? I loved her to death. Great lady. We still communicate. But let's face
it. But she was a whore.
She would suck anybody's dick at any time. She was sucking my dick. It takes a lot to suck my dick. Not any fucking smart girl would suck my dick. So this chick was just an animal. But she was a whore. And her whole thing was we lived right on Hollywood. And... Laurel Canyon, Runyon Canyon. We lived in not the first building.
That's where I live.
But in the white building. It's an old Russian building.
Yeah.
66 something. You walk in the thing, it smells like Slovakia and fucking gyros. It's all international, the building. That's your first place when you move into Hollywood. Oh, yeah. That was our first apartment. And in the morning, she'd make me walk up Laurel Canyon. And we had a dog then. And on the way down the hill, we'd stop. And I tell you what used to burn me up about Laurel Canyon. It became more of a meeting place. And this was 17 years ago. It was chicks all with hats, and there used to be a bench there. The thing when you walk up, where you guys do yoga now, used to be a doggy park.
I lived here, I remember.
20 years ago.
I was here for about 20 years.
20 years ago, it was a doggy park. And then you'd walk up, then they'd warn you about the snakes. And I got to tell you something. When you get to the top of Laurel Canyon... If you do Laurel Canyon 4 days a week, you will lose some fucking weight. It's a nice little hike for somebody starting out. It's not like the Hollywood sign. I thought the Hollywood sign was, I like Runyon Canyon. But what bothered me in those days was that I would wait for her. She was always like doing something dirty. And there would always be these girls with hats on. And they would kept talking about Leo. well, oh my God, what did Leo say to you last night? And this was when the Titanic was hot.
Yeah.
And all they would do is sit there and talk about Leo and Jack. How they went to Jack's last night. And Jack was so horny, but he busted out a bottle of champagne. It was so cool. And I used to listen to them and want to get a gun and just end it for them right there. And they would read their sides, which has always bothered me. Listen, I know what it is to go in for an audition. Today I was going on my sides. You know where? In the fucking car. Down the street from the audition, because I got there 15 minutes early. You know, but to read your sides in front of people so people could stop and ask you, what are you reading for? Oh, my God, we love her. Oh, my God, send her our love. You know, oh. And that's why I stopped. Oh, that's why I stopped going to Runyon Canyon, because I felt like it had become this other thing. But then for a while there, they've been doing yoga there. Obviously, you're the man.
15 years. Runyon Canyon is awesome. And it's a great park. You just got to kind of get through the entrance where all the dogs congregate and kind of pee on the front fence. So it gives the illusion that the park smells like pee. But look, the place is very busy already.
It's busy. It's busy.
Yeah, yeah.
I see it in the mornings. You see, if you drive in Hollywood at 8:30, you see people walking
that's right.
from everywhere to fucking Runyon Canyon. It really, it's...
Yeah, yeah. It's a great... So I pay a little extra for wherever I live to be close to that park so I can walk there, you know, for yoga or for my dogs. But, yeah, I'm lucky to be close to that park, for sure.
Now, what style of yoga do you teach there?
My background is in, like, what would be called, like, Ashtanga yoga, which basically is, like, called people call, like, power yoga. So, let's say my personality, like, in kettlebell class, where I'm a little bit strict and focused on technique, my yoga is exactly the same thing, and it's not no mysticism, and no Sanskrit, even. It's just very rigorous, like, even for beginners. It's for beginners and up, but, you know, you kind of got to be up for the challenge of sucking at it at first. But I teach 5 classes up there a week. We have 17 other classes if you stick with it.
What time do you teach during the week?
I teach, I'll give you all my Facebook stuff for that schedule because it's a huge schedule, but I basically teach 5 different days over the week, you know, Saturday, Sunday, 10:30 to 11:30 in the morning, Tuesday, Friday, and Sunday, 2 to 3 p.m. But I'll give you all my Facebook stuff at the end because we have all these other classes, and I always like to promote all the teachers and because it's all volunteer, you know, and we're really lucky, so, yeah.
I've always liked that style of put what you can to can.
If enough people come out, I mean, we do okay.
You know, I lived in Boulder for 10 years.
Yeah.
I didn't know what yoga was. I did not hate it, but it scared me. Yeah. I used to hang out at Naropa Institute. I used to go there and eat lunch. My friend owns a cafeteria. And I used to hear about it and whatnot. It's just, I got into it once I met my wife. My wife finally pulled me over there, and I thought it was interesting as fuck. But I did it at the Y in Hollywood, which was phenomenal yoga, beginner class on Sunday from 3 to 4:30. But then when I moved to North Hollywood, that yoga at that Y isn't that good. And I would try, there's an 11:45 to 12:45 on Mondays, which is my speed. The Wednesday night class is power yoga.
Yeah.
Kundalini, it's a big fat guy, and he shows you his feet. And he's got corns and shit.
A lot of people tell
me. That's the class he just
showed
you.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean.
He shows up with a gong. He has a big white beard. He wears like a pajama top, and the sweats don't fucking fit.
Yeah.
You can see the stains in the sweats where he's peeing himself.
Oh,
and then he takes his feet off, his shoes off.
He's just like a homeless
you
guy.
Think, you think, no, no, you think my feet are fucked up. This guy's feet are fucked up. And then he comes out and he bangs a gong. Once he busted out the gong, it was all over.
We have both that style of yoga and the other style that's like that's more like a disciplined and rigorous, none of that mumbo-jumbo shit. But that turns a lot of people off to it. If you're from back east especially, that stuff just – people don't like it. Now, there are genuine people like that who I don't understand who are like fucking magicians. I just teach it as exercise. And it really helped me actually as a strength athlete too because it improves your mobility. It keeps your mobility. That mobility you had in karate from doing... I see you're still doing splits and shit. So you can see how important that mobility is.
Have you ever done DDP yoga? Because I did it once. And
no,
it was kind of cool.
It's that you want to like either do yoga or not do it. Like you got to know if you're following something like that. It is what it is. I mean, you're not going to do that for a lifetime, right?
I don't know. I only did it once. It was kind of cool.
Whatever your intro is, but it's like anything else. You got to decide you want to get into it and practice it and put in a few hours a week and get better at it or do that a couple times and never do it again. So whatever you feel like doing. I like you doing the jiu-jitsu now. You don't want to eat too much. Now you're going to do kettlebells. It's not just you're doing it with me once a week, and you got to find another day to do it. You don't want to do this shit just once a week.
Right.
Because you'll just kind of – your body will just get stuck.
They have them at my gym. I was going to do it again, but I was surprised how sore I got. Like just yesterday I stopped being sore.
No, I'll give you stuff to do when you're not in front of me. but hopefully I'll get you in front of me eventually when we don't have a bunch of other guys there. See, the kettlebell stuff really does, if you get serious about it, work best privately. I actually don't teach. I only teach this one class, and I teach only privates. I work at least 30 hours a week. So, you know,
how long is a kettlebell private with you?
It's always almost an hour. Okay. I try to just keep it at an hour because right. You know, when you have a coach who kind of has a general idea of what you're doing after screening you, I know what I'm going to do with you because everybody needs most of the same movements. And, you know, I enjoy teaching because I like the repetition of doing the same thing over and over and making it, you know, tighter and stronger and finessing it more. And you can just get stronger, you know, and about in an hour. And I train people two times a week. I try not to train them more. But I like the class of VMAC with you guys and John Budd. Give credit to John Budd. I thank him for introducing me to you. The toughest guy I know, been kicking ass since we were in college, right? Your jiu-jitsu teacher, John Budd.
That's why it was really impressive that he knew you that long.
Yeah, East Coast. Yeah.
And
yeah.
You guys were still connected. And that's the East Coast type of thing where you stay connected.
Yeah.
And to live, you know, 8 fucking minutes apart.
Super lucky.
Is
yeah.
even luckier. When he kept telling yeah. me about you, I kept saying, this is amazing that you hung out with some. And how he described you, I expected fucking some guy with long hair and the thing with yeah, the fucking guru. But once you said you were Jersey, the whole fucking thing, that's what I have one regret when it comes. I have two regrets that I didn't start jiu-jitsu at 25.
Me too,
that's
I think.
That's what I told him, because he doesn't understand.
Well, he wrestled, though. That's good.
The man, humps and bumps you're going to go
not
through
well.
Over 1 year, Lee. And then you're going to have somewhere to go 2 days a week, regardless of what's going on in your life.
Everybody's got to train.
Everybody's got to do something. You don't really like that fucking gym.
Doesn't matter if you don't.
These are your friends. So you go in there. But what the fuck was I going to fucking tell you, cocksucker?
Your second regret.
My second regret was not starting yoga early.
Yeah.
I loved yoga, and I liked I paid for a class, like a bigger time class. I didn't do too well on that. I wasn't prepared. I need something a little slow. I'm a little old in my knees. I had surgery on this knee. And I got to go back and get a cut again. This thing is damaged again. I'm just waiting to turn the fat thing down so I can shoot down to fucking Marina Del Rey and tell this guy, listen, you got to give me another MRI. This thing's fucked up again. I heard the thing pop.
Oh, no.
6 weeks ago. Yeah, I just been walking around wounded because I ain't got time to go to Marina Del Rey.
Yeah, you don't show pain. I couldn't tell you were beat up
I'm
in that
pain.
Class.
Oh, yeah. Limp. I limp during the rest of the week.
That's not good.
I could feel it. And it's not getting worse. It's in the neighborhood. It's not as bad as the last time, but there's something going on. But this one hurt when I was doing deadlifts. I lifted the weight the last two times I did deadlifts. And the left one started hurting, which I had surgery on. This is the one I knocked my wife up first. This is the 2009. This is the one that got the fucking rhythm going, that got the fucking savage going. But yoga is another thing. I wish I would have started earlier because I knew what the benefits were, you know, if you add it to something else.
You can build strength easier than anything else, though. With the weight training, with the yoga, with everything that you're doing. I mean, your workload might be a little high. You just don't want to train. You don't want to train too much. You know, strength training a couple few days a week, jiu-jitsu a couple few days a week, and the more walking a person can do. But I think that your general lifestyle of being busy burns a lot of energy. Anytime you travel.
I walk the baby to school Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I walk and back. Then we pick her up, so I have my little... Like today, I took a swim, but I jumped in the big boy's pool. I did as many fucking laps as I could. I go back, she'd jump in with me, I'd swim with her. But I got to do laps again and breathe, which is fucking tough. It was tough, and I had to modify my breathing. I was seeing what I was doing wrong. I had to focus on my movement. I was cutting like 10 feet before the wall, and then I was going 8 feet before the wall, and then finally by the end, I hit the fucking wall because I was tilting my head too much. I wasn't breathing properly. It's a technique is so... Listen, Yogi Steve, I know we're past your bedtime. Let me do some sponsors here. What's your fate? Let's do it.
You go ahead, whenever you're ready.
Yo, number two, if you're going to get in shape, if you want to get your head together, if you want to get healthy, do me a favor. Go to Honor.com right now, all right? They ain't fucking around. Whether it's the Alpha brand, which I believe in because they give you 100% money back guarantee, and they don't even want the fucking product back to the hemp protein shakes. The chocolate and the acai vanilla. I also enjoy the testosterone boost. Whatever you're fucking into, do me a favor. I'm going to sit here and lie to you. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. Go to Honor.com right now. If you see something you enjoy, just supplements. What do you go to the box and press?
Church.
Boom!
Ben.
C-H-U-R-C-H. Get 10% off your first motherfucking order, you bad motherfucker. Go to Honor. Give it a shot. Number two. Sorry, I got something stuck in my throat. HittySigs.com. tremendous. 24 milligrams, 16, 8, 0. If you want to quit smoking, they also have the cigar of fucking death. You know what the secret is to hit these cigs? Longer lasting, tastes better. 1,200 guaranteed puffs. What do you think those ISIS 7-Eleven, what do you think they're giving you? They're giving you fucking 300-400 puffs for fucking $10. Hitty Cigs, 1,200 fucking puffs guaranteed. Go to Hitty Cigs right now and press in.
Joey's Church.
Boom! And get 5 for 5. So this is what you're going to do. You're going to get a fucking 5 for 50. I'm sorry.
That's a good deal.
5 for 5. That's old school. We're talking Black Beauties. Hitty Cigs. What you're going to do is 5 for 50. You go to HittyCigs.com and press in.
Joey's Church.
Boom! And you get a cigar and you get a 24 milligram, a 16, and 8, and a 0. Who's fucking better than you? And we don't stop there. Oh, shit. Los Gumis, motherfucking hermanos, keeping it together with the edibles of death, whether it's the white chocolate, whether it's the fucking Gumi bear, the dragon of death that Lee used to get fucked up just eating the head, whether it's their vapor pen, whatever you want, Los Gumis hermanos is there. One of the best vapor pens in the market right now. They're going to give you 20% off your first order. It's 50. You're going to get it for 40. You got a problem. The little thing burns out. You call Dave. He's right there with the money. Go to Los Gumis Hermanos and press in.
Go to Nail the Life and press in Joey Diaz.
I mean, what the fuck? You're mumbling, stumbling.
It's Nailed It Life.
What is
go
it?
Go to nailedatlife.com and use code word Joey Diaz.
There you go. You're mumbling and stumbling. You're fucked.
You give me like 500 milligrams.
You get
20%.
What 500?
Well.
20% off I'm giving you. What 500? What are you confusing the people? You're giving them fake fucking numbers, Lee.
No, I'm not.
20% Los Gumis Hermanos. I'm going to give you 5 Hitty Cigs for $50. And on it, I'm giving you 10%. For the best nootropics on the market. And don't forget, I'm at the DC Improv next week, taping my new CD. I hope I have enough material wound up here, because I'm trying to cut this fucking hour and a half into a CD and a DVD. But fuck it, we're going to make it work, cocksuckers. I want to thank Yogi Steve for coming on the show today and blessing us with his kettlebell knowledge.
I really appreciate you having me on here. And you want me to shoot all that social media at you right now real quick?
Hit me.
It's on Instagram and Twitter. It's Outlier Strength. It's just two words, Outlier Strength. That's Instagram and Twitter. And hopefully I'll be lucky enough to get at least one more video of you swinging that kettlebell for a 15-second Instagram clip.
Fuck yeah.
With the group, I mean. So definitely hit up Outlier Strength on Instagram and Twitter. I actually opened up a Twitter account because of you. I'm not actually doing anything but Instagram and Facebook, really. And if you want to know about the yoga stuff, because we have a lot of classes, the schedule is long, it's just Runyon Canyon Yoga on Facebook. And that's and that can give you all the information on yoga.
And you also
like
do nutrition also.
You know, everything I do with food is just for free, because I'm not really like trained in food, but I've just been studying it. And I'm just a self-trained nutritionist, and I feel like I can help anybody with their diet, but especially dudes. I think there are like certain habits that males should eat a little bit differently than women.
You should create a system, and it should all just be called snacks are for pussies.
That pretty much is the system. Buddy. That's the system. I'm sorry, but I don't want to like talk negatively, because I understand that the battle with food is as real as the battle with alcohol or any other drug. And if you're not doing the hard drugs, it's okay to like whatever.
So you won't eat fruit in between dinner?
I'd rather eat ice cream than fruit, because to me, like, it's a simple sugar, and I'd rather just eat it in a big dose and get like full on it, and then not eat it again for like a day or two.
So you eat a big dose of fruit.
Yeah, my second meal after eggs and bacon for first meal. Second meal would be like a giant salad with like broccoli, cabbage, but a ton of chicken, but not the low-fat chicken. I don't believe in low-fat, especially for men. High-fat diet is better. It promotes better hormones. So I eat like the chicken thigh, and I put it in the crock pot. I cook all my food. That's kind of like also, unfortunately, that's the key. I mean, if you make your own food, you're 90% there. Eating out is tough. And then for dinner, I eat steak and tons of potatoes and rice. And if I'm not eating good, then I'll eat a pint of Ben & Jerry's a couple of hours later. If I'm eating good, I'll eat nothing.
Thank you, Yogi Steve. You're a savage.
Thanks, boss.
I love you, cocksuckers. We'll be back Wednesday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Don't forget about us. Stay black.
And don't forget, guys, I have my podcasting seminar August 15th in Toronto and the Lifeline G Radio on August 14th. Go to my website for tickets. And this podcast was brought to you by Onnit.com. You go to Onnit.com and use Coburg Church. To get 10% off all the great optimization products. Also, go to nailedatlife.com and use code word Joey Diaz to get 20% off the premier vapor pen on the market. And they're also the makers of Los Gumis Hermanos and get you as fucked up as I am right now. And go to hitecigs.com, better tasting, longer lasting. The proof is in the vape. And you get 5 Hit E-Cigs for $50 when you use code word Joey's Church.
Fucked up. What's my mulligan?
She made